Hi, I'm Liam O'Rourke. As far as pet peeves go, I hate smiling asshole baby faces, wrestlers not wearing knee pads, and Survivor Series pay-per-views without a single Survivor Series match.
I'm Carl Jones, an expert in the three-stage intro. I'm fantastic at 6 degrees of separation, and now that Brock Lesnar's going to be off TV for the next several months, I'm soon going to be familiar with 12-step program.
I'm Kieran O'Rourke, and a lot of you have emailed me asking for a little insight into the family history of the brothers Raw. At a recent family wedding, Liam was described as the clever one, and I was described as the cool one. As we're both gentlemen, we both protested, pretending we were offended and wish we were the other one, but deep down we both know it's true.
I'm G. John Chase. I have a feeling that there's going to be a lot of tension in this group as we do this podcast, so I'm going to go to my happy place, the divine Ellie Kemper in a beautiful summer dress handing me a cold glass of lemonade on the beach, whilst Brock Lesnar vapor rubs my chest, all in a tight pair of Speedos.
And I'm Luke Edwards. Sadly, it's going to be another quiet episode for me, because I'm not known for finding any pet peeves or problems with anyone. Liam, what are you doing? Take your hand off the mic! I can't do it! It's too distracting! You're moving the mic! It's unprofessional! What?
This is the panel for the 35th Squared Circle Gazette Radio, and you can hear us talk about wrestling pet peeves and irrational hatreds next.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, what condition my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Hello everyone, and welcome to the 35th Squared Circle Gazette Radio. I am Liam O'Rourke alongside G. John Chase. Kieran O'Rourke.
Easy now.
Carl Jones.
Sweet liquor eases the pain.
And the man with the Brock Lesnar schedule of Squared Circle Gazette Radio, Luke Edwards.
I'm back, but only as long as you're paying me.
And we are very glad to have you, as well as the full panel, five people here today, for a topic that has aroused a lot of responses. Wrestling's pet peeves and irrational hatreds. We threw this out to the internet, and shock horror, we got amongst our most feedback ever. A lot of people have a lot of different issues with the greatest sport of them all. We're going to get to them today, as well as talking about our own. And for those of you who have emailed in at scgradio@hotmail.com, we're going to get to yours today. And it can be anything. It can be a wrestler you've hated all your life. It can be a show that you've never liked. It can be just an odd thing here or there that the WWE or any company ever has done. Any kind of commonly held perception, anything. So we've really kind of had this wide open. We're going to start with Big Vic from TPWW Forums, who says, I really dislike when a wrestler will look at the referee during a three count, showing no signs of fatigue, and just plainly watching his hand until he kicks out. I'm noticing this a bit more now with a lot of wrestlers. I wonder if it happens more often now, or if I just didn't notice it as a kid. This is something I notice a lot with The Undertaker, actually.
Yeah, more close-ups, I think. The camera angles is one thing. The more close-ups you get, the more guys staring to the ref's eyes you get, I guess.
If this is the biggest problem we've got of HD wrestling, is the fact that we can see where the wrestler's eyes are looking, it's not the worst thing in the world.
No, it is fucking annoying. I think it's annoying.
It is irritating. I'd have liked him to have possibly mentioned a couple of wrestlers.
Examples?
A few examples. Yeah. Because, I'd think, Rock, I'm looking in your direction. As much as people love
looking in the referee.
No, absolutely. as much as people love The Rock, and I'm amongst them, he is one of the chief offenders when it comes to staring at the ref during the count.
Okay, so this is one that really does burn a hole and lots of fire under you too, Carl.
So what's the what's your actual problem? Is it you feel it's like breaking kayfabe or exposing?
He's waiting for the count, kind of thing. What's the deal?
Is it? But another perception, maybe another take on the situation, may be that if it was real,
why would he not?
You would use that extra second to get a rest. Yeah. Second wind, come back.
Yeah,
think about it.
Okay, so that's part of what this show is going to be, is determining how many of these pet peeves are irrational hatreds, or whether they can be justified in some sense or not.
That's some Bobby the Brain Heenan stuff right there.
I'm
not complaining, that's fantastic.
No,
that's exactly
you know what?
What
I swear I heard Bobby Heenan say that on Invasion of the Body Slammers, or some kind of obscure tape from the early 90s.
Like stuff now,
I've gone from dropping F-bombs to logic bombs. I feel that's going to be my role on the show.
Is the next one along the same lines?
There's a lot of smaller ones, not like this.
All right, because I don't know whether to insert this in now or maybe later or something, but like, in terms along the lines of like the whole like referee scenario, I'll just put like this is a petty one from my end of things, but it's just I really fucking hate when referees do slow three counts.
Like, it's right,
it is preferable,
it's the Gene Knitsky.
Oh, that awful referee job. Starrcade 83.
Yeah, is that the right pronunciation? I apologise if it's not, but yeah, fuck it. I hate a slow counting referee as well.
My God, sorry, I thought somebody had just made a Gene Snitsky reference and I got panicked for a moment.
Don't worry. Slow counts aren't his fault.
That's it, folks. Thanks for coming. If we're not topping that, this has been Luke Edwards.
I understand what you mean, to the point that it's been overused, I think. Mm. See, when I first thought you were mentioning slow counts there, I thought you were going to go more in the line sort of Scott Armstrong or Nick Patrick.
One Mississippi.
Yeah.
Two Mississippi.
I mean, Scott Armstrong, you want to talk irrational hate? I hate his attempt at a three count at any stage of a match.
Referees counting cadence, I guess. Yeah. That's the topic, isn't it?
Yeah, you had it right. Was Brian Hebner. He had a fucking great count.
B-Heb was a good ref. I like
it. It was just like it was just something like when they're not injured, that's even more insulting. But when they've been hurt, it was just something I noticed recently when I was watching something on the network. I think it was something to do with Austin. Everything's like building up, you know, and Austin, you know, he takes out the Stooges one at a time or something. I can't remember exactly what match it is, but he takes out some of the Stooges, takes out some members of the corporation, turns around, stunners someone, and you're just waiting for it to just go 1, 2, 3, yeah, and a pop, and it's just like 1, 2, and you just see like the fucking crowd, not in a way like, oh, this is tension. They're just going like, fucking just count the three, fuck's sake. It's just like, anytime I've ever seen that, it just always takes me out of the moment. I just hate it.
Kind of like a woman farting when you're going down on her.
Insert.
Takes her at the moment, whatever.
Carnival from Pro Wrestling Only with one I really enjoy here. JBL's subdued philosophical. We may be seeing the final hurrah of a once proud gunslinger mounting his mighty steed one last time in the glimmer of a red horizon type of commentary. JBL gets a bit of a rough ride here. Irrational pet peeve, or does this annoy you too? This style of commentary?
I just always assume JBL's always taking the piss, so it, within that context, I think he's always entertaining, but not as a serious commentator.
It's almost like an attempt to follow on from JR, in the sense of JR, of those, you know, the analogies, like a government mule running like a scalded dog, that sort of thing. But he'd find those moments in matches where he'd sort of be almost really sincere. You take Austin's last match, for example, where he's talking about it being his last hurrah. I think he throws in some Western reference there. But JR does it in a sense that's sort of credible.
Yeah.
And you get JBL, and it probably doesn't help that you can just picture his face as he's saying it with that bloody smile whenever the hard camera's on the three of them at the desk.
Smile.
Yeah. The smile that just doesn't move from his face, and you can just picture it. And sort of, again, it's like, I think he's trying to be serious. I'm not sure. I don't know, he just mentioned the Six Nations, which is lost on 95% of their audience, so who knows?
I always assumed JBL's doing like a Ron Burgundy gimmick of some type.
Yeah, I
you think you have that in mind, and you enjoy his commentary a whole lot more.
Moving on to one's a bit more serious here. JN Lister from the UK Fan Forum says, anytime people use wrestling being predetermined as an illogical explanation or justification for an unrelated point, because wrestling is fake, the storylines don't have to make sense, or because it's predetermined, people dying early doesn't matter, and so on and so forth. Bit more of a serious pet peeve here. Quite an interesting one, though, because I do hear that a lot in the it doesn't matter, it's wrestling. Especially with it, I heard this a lot during the dying days of WCW, actually.
Yeah, it's kind of one, well, I've thought of loads, but one I had in mind was one I text you about, and I've said it before. When you've got the McMahons on, who you're supposed to be a bigger heel act on TV, and then you have them with the dying kid or the dead kid being all, you know,
mushy.
You're mushy, and it's like, oh, it's just, yeah, you've done a nice thing, but for fuck's sake, you're just completely contradictory messages on the same show, but because one's real and one is. The stage, fucking the circus, then forget about it. Yeah,
you're implying, however, when you think about it, that heel characters should be completely black and white, in that if they're nasty people, they should be angry and bad people towards dying children.
No, you don't have to show it on your fucking TV. But yeah, I mean,
I want promo videos. It's like, of Steph slapping the guy.
It's like
berating him for not making it. Then,
Hold on.
It's a B+ at best.
Is that blood type?
It's like the only person we've seen to Triple H sell for in the last 2 years is Ronda Rousey and a fucking dead kid. And it's like, shits over the rest of your roster. Time and a place, that's what I'm saying.
So that wasn't quite as serious as I thought it was going to be. Moving on, some quick fire ones. Innovator from TPWW Forum says, guys are dead on the floor, then amazingly run and jump into the ring at the count of nine. Some guys are great at the gradual sell, others, like Cena, just run in, showing no effects of anything. Weak-ass clotheslines, RVD. Not enough secondary finishes that can end matches. Without them or guys using pinning combinations, everyone in the crowd just waits for finishes. Main roster women either being whores, skanks, bitches, or crazy in 2015. This is awesome chance, which a personal one for me. Yeah. I think everybody around the table would agree there. Wrestlers acting like they don't watch the show. Oh, that's a pretty good one too. And the main events of the show never being announced or made until halfway through the show.
Though I will say, Jerry Lawler commentates on the show and still doesn't watch, so...
Well, that's not the worst point I've ever heard in the world.
So what was the first one again?
Guys being laid out on the floor outside the ring and then bombing it back in at the count of nine.
That one's a particularly bad one that I don't like. It's just... it's he's picked on Cena as well, but there's plenty more than that. It's always the way when you watch them, and it's like nine up until the nine count. I'd say it goes as far as the nine count, they're still dead, and it's just as they're about to go to ten, they somehow just spring into the ring every single time. It's just ridiculous.
Well, yeah, I think it does go far beyond Cena. I think it's just almost a company wide epidemic these days. I mean, I love Dean Ambrose, but he's got a knack during his comebacks of not selling a leg or not selling the arm, and so it's not...
I think somebody mentions that a little bit later on too.
Oh, do they? Oh.
They do indeed. Somebody else, you're not the only one to pick up on this.
Ah, synergy.
The only other one I've mentioned out of that incredibly rapid-fire selection of reasonably unrelated objects that just got thrown at us, weak clotheslines. You think the thing with wrestling is, one of the advantages in wrestling is, if you're shit at doing dropkicks, you don't have to do a fucking dropkick. However, with clotheslines and punches and running the ropes, if you're shit at those, retire. Because you're going to have to do them at some point. And that's kind of just part and parcel. And so, yeah, how hard is a fucking clothesline, folks? I want you to stand up right now at home. If you're driving through traffic, stand up, get out of your car, throw a clothesline at a passerby. It's not fucking hard.
Don't pull over to do the clothesline. Just go out of the window and take down a cyclist.
Yeah. Just say you were indicating.
Air Raid from the UK fan. Yeah, Air Raid from the UK fan forum, whose feedback I always love. I feel compelled to add how much I hate Kofi Kingston. Wow. He's just completely shit and doesn't convince me that he's a wrestler in the slightest. He doesn't make me think that he could beat anyone up, and he isn't good enough a wrestler, fast enough, or dangerous enough with strikes, for example, to make me think that he could beat anybody tougher than him. Whereas I used to think Bret Hart was good enough, and I think Daniel Bryan is tough enough, Kofi has nothing. His offense is weak as you like, and his finish is a dumb kick that Flash Funk used as a mid-match move. It looks good, but I don't believe it could beat anyone. His endless feuds with the Zigglers or McIntyres over the mid-card belts were a primary reason why I started losing interest in who held each. The fact that this guy has won the IC title 4 times, the US title 3 times, says it all, in that he's had 7 mid-card title reigns and still achieved nothing that I consider memorable in any of them. He's just there. I basically hate everything about Kofi, from his music to his repertoire to his mannerisms. God, especially his mannerisms. I really want someone to beat the shit out of him. He annoys me so much. I even dislike when he pops up in DVDs to talk about stuff that happened while he wasn't in the company, and he basically just tells you what happened, which you know, because you just saw it. Again, he's just there. I'm sure he's a lovely bloke, and the kids seem to like him, but I wish he'd fuck off.
Just remember, Air Raid, that tomorrow is a new day.
Oh, come on, that's terrible.
It was supposed to be. A bit like Kofi Kingston. Oh. I don't share any particular love for Kofi either, though he does jump really high. Has anyone ever noticed that?
I heard that about it.
I think it may have been mentioned on commentary once or
was
twice.
Right? Yeah.
No. How about the team name Air Boom? Did you like that, Carl?
I forgot that even existed.
There you go.
That was a thing. I don't hold any particularly ill will towards Kofi Kingston, but I thought that was a fair argument against him. I think probably the main aspect of what he was arguing there, which I agree with, is there's a lot of people who are guilty of this, but in particular Kofi, where everything that he does in the ring seems... there never seems to be anything that just seems spontaneous, like, you know, a good wrestler's supposed to do. It's supposed to not look like it's being rehearsed or planned out or something like that. But Kofi just always, everything he does just always seems like he's maybe practiced it 10 times before the match started or something like that, in the back or earlier that day. It's just, he seems more of an acrobat than say, a wrestler.
Can I ask then, does it Jamaica crazy?
you're on a roll here today, aren't you, Carl? What do you think about this whole thing of doing nothing memorable? Agree, disagree on the table?
Jumped through Randy Orton through a table once.
When was that exactly?
I don't know.
Five years ago?
I think he destroyed his car about 10 years ago.
Did he? Is he going to get into the Hall of Fame?
Coco's in.
Even if you don't dislike Kofi, no one cares remotely enough about him to try and argue against those points, really, do they?
No one cares
enough about him, even if you don't hate him, so it just sort of sums it up, really.
It's all valid, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't see anybody making the case that he's a great worker, certainly.
That's because we haven't got any 12-year-olds here to go, I love Kofi! That's not how 12-year-olds sound at all.
They're all from Yorkshire.
They're from Yorkshire!
Moving on here to Steve Bachenik, who wrote in and said, I'm going to assume you mean other than Hulk Hogan. That low-hanging fruit is too easy. As far as my pet peeve, having the powers that be, never allowing anyone to get over without permission. The arrogance that they have in hand-choosing who we should be fed is astounding. One would think we would learn to promote based on fan reactions, and developing their characters would be far easier than forcing someone the fans don't want. The worst example was how they buried Zack Ryder. I know his ceiling is nothing more than a mid-carder, but for some reason I really like that kid. It was here in Baltimore he won the US title from Dolph Ziggler, and he was over. Within a few weeks, he was embarrassed and buried so far that it's been 4 years and he ain't dug himself out yet. And kind of echoing this point, the great Rick Morris from the fbhlounge.blogspot.com. Other than revisionism that says that Ronnie Garvin sucked, I'm most bothered by Vince's hypocrisy, claiming to listen to the audience while only pushing guys that he wants to push anyway. We all know the examples, past and present. I don't know if this is a point we really need to belabor too much other than what we just mentioned there, but certainly this is something that a lot of people would probably take issue with.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say anything because it's one you could really go into, but the only thing I'll say in defence of the company would be that sometimes guys do have ceilings and it's going to be a sure hot run for in whatever position they're in. So like Zack Ryder, Mizdow is the current one. Yeah. You probably got maybe 6 months and will be on TV, we'll see.
Zack Ryder's kind of a different one, as in he was in kind of mediocrity and then he kind of dug himself out. He got himself over, and then like once he did, it was just the company, instead of actually kind of using it as a springboard of like, oh, okay, someone's proved us wrong, it was just, you know, Vince just decided like, yeah, we'll put you with the whole Cena Eve storyline, bury you, and that's it. And he's absolutely right. I'm actually still surprised he's still employed the company. I don't know if they think nothing of him, that they've buried him as soon as he did get over by himself. Like, why have they kept him around?
It actually ties into a very good point about Vince hypocrisy, like Rick mentioned there, because one of the things I always kind of get perturbed by is when you watch these old documentaries, especially about the Monday Night War, where they have the balls to say, oh, well, WCW, they were the mess. WWF, we listened to the audience. And it's like, yeah, we didn't screw everything up. When the audience tells us one thing, we went ahead and did it. And of course, now, the audience tells them plenty of things. Not necessarily they should do everything the audience says, but I'm saying, you know, they barely listen to the audience. And
sort of echo Kieran's point a bit there. There is a shelf life with a lot of these guys, and this is something that other podcasts have gone into in far greater detail. The only thing that really grates on me now in this regard is this notion of people who tend to say, oh, it's the fans having a bitch and a moan and sort of throwing their toys out the pram type of thing. And you know, you can't book immediately to the fans' reaction all the time. And I understand that. I think we all do around this table. I think the reason it grates on me so much is because they'll complain about the fans not buying into what they want. But they created the beast, if you like, through the interactive stuff, through Vote Now, you know, all that sort of thing.
Through tout.
Yeah. It's a problem in large part of the company's own making.
Winged Eagle from Pro Wrestling Only says, Big Show, may the gods of acromegaly show no mercy on this one.
Tell you what pisses me off about Big Show, and this is what I thought of. He's like the one guy in the world who absolutely has to get custom-made gear, but it's the most boring-ass gear of all time.
You're not a fan of the sort of the military kind of thing to his leotard?
He's got those little chevrons he's got. Sometimes it's the fatigue, sometimes it's the chevrons. Mm. Are just awful. I don't know what you have on there, but something.
These are thoughts that are echoed by
P45.
These are thoughts that are echoed by Cobra1000 on the UK fan forum, who says, Big Show, I'm sure he's a top bloke, but fuck me, seeing him on my TV is soul-destroying. I know he's a giant and what have you, but his lack of development and the fact he's still being put over the younger guys just gripes me. This is actually particularly key right now, where we really don't have many people left on the roster after WrestleMania, and Big Show's one of these guys that's going to be around for a while. At the top. Again.
Take it easy on the guy. His dad died.
how many guys get a run this long and just are the same as they've ever been?
And have been turned so much and mean so little and yet still get protected.
They're all utility guys, aren't they, now, though? That's the thing. They're all utility guys. And because of his size, and he's always going to be... have his own gimmick and always stand out in his own way. So that's why he's been around so long. He's nothing more than a utility guy. Yeah, it's frustrating when he goes over guys.
Even stuff like him pinning Roman Reigns on Raw. What was that about?
That's fucking stupid, though.
Brad Brains from the F4W message board says, crowds trying to get themselves over. We are awesome chants are the worst. Oh, yeah. That's one that I completely echo. And I'm also going to throw in the This Is Wrestling chant, which is one that really... yeah, it really fucking sticks in my ass, if you will.
On personal note, I hate to get annoyed when they chant for CM Punk now, when it's like, he's gone. Yeah, he's gone at the company, he's not coming back. Just fucking stop. Just leave it out.
The one I would say, actually, that hasn't been mentioned either when it comes to the crowd and does really grate on me a lot is the You've Still Got It chant.
Yeah.
It always comes immediately following either a hip toss or an arm drag, followed by a drop kick.
You're not going to defend this at all, Carl, but like at WrestleMania, they did it with Sting as well.
Moving along to a loopy date from TPW Reform, who's got a good few ones here. I hate when WWE ignores the past. It's so annoying to watch two guys have a blood feud where they try to murder each other right up until the moment where they have an organized, sanctioned wrestling match. But then it's just onto the next guy. Then a couple of months down the line, one of them turns face or heel. Now they're on the same side in tag matches, completely forgetting about the time they hated each other so much they almost literally killed each other.
Yeah, I can. I think we could all probably accept a bit of creative license, and you can let things go that were sort of years and years in the past. But the fact that it's quite frequent now, where the company will forget something from not necessarily 3 months ago, but 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
You know, that sort of, because we know it's a work, but you like to suspend your disbelief, and I'd like to not be treated like an idiot, and at least have some sort of consistency to the storytelling.
Yeah.
How naive I am.
Lupe also says, I also hate when the main event babyface beats up 50 people all at once on TV in about 5 minutes, but takes a grueling 25 minutes when it's one-on-one at the pay-per-view.
It's all about adrenaline.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Think so? Okay.
Logic bomb.
Badass babyfaces who was...
It's going to be your thing now, isn't it?
He's got another one here. Badass baby faces who will take on the world, then immediately become spineless cowards the moment they turn heel. This is a particularly tiresome one with Steve Austin in 2001 when they're...
No.
Yes.
What are you talking about? He hit Lita with a chair.
He took a cookie pan shot from his wife and sold it like he'd been shot with a gun.
He's such a trooper.
It was awful, Carl, and you know it.
The man sold for the fly, damn it.
Yester Leon from F4W says, I cannot stand WWE's use of shaky cam. It's so distracting. Like, why is the cameraman shaking around willy-nilly when someone throws a punch in the ring? I look forward to someone else taking over television production for this reason alone. Carl, this one seems to stick in your craw.
Only because the first time I noticed it, I decided to refer to it as the Okie Kokie camera. You know, it's in, it's out. No one knows what the fuck's going on.
I'd extend it beyond that, actually, to one of the things that really is... bugged me for quite a while now is the way they edit live shows, live matches, any match indeed, but the WWE in particular have started this trend, and it's spread everywhere else now, of cutting the camera angle in every impact.
Yeah,
every punch,
yeah.
Cut to a different angle, and it drives me up the fucking wall. I mean, and also, by the way, I apologise to anyone who hasn't noticed this, because you will now notice this, and you will never be able to stop noticing this, and you will actually smile. You'll take a little bit of happiness from every time that they don't do that, which at WrestleMania was twice, for those who are keeping count.
Well, just on that point of cameras then, because I detest the shaky cam, you may have picked up on that. What's everyone's opinion of the turnbuckle camera now?
I don't hate it.
Because I'm not a fan of that either.
It's better than the referee cam back in the day.
It looks cheap for me. The ladder cam was okay, yeah. And I'll let that.
Oh, the Wile E. Coyote.
Yeah,
cam.
Yeah. I mean, so that's okay, like the wacky lens, but the on the turnbuckle is just like, why do you need a shit shot through a shit lens when you got beautiful HD cameras?
That's it.
A meter away.
Because you think what does that add? And the answer is absolutely nothing.
What about that? One thing that they don't use enough is that super slow motion camera. You see the impact. That's a great camera. Why they got the cameras in the posts when they can use
because,
that?
Because then you'd see that they missed by about 5 foot in someone's distance.
And unfortunately, I think that's a lot of the shake cam. That's a lot of what you mentioned, Luke. There's a curtain on impact. It's to disguise the flaws of some of this stuff, especially when it's in HD.
That's why the beauty of the main event of WrestleMania this year, when they actually did do the slow motion camera, because, you know, Brock was actually beating the fuck out of Reigns. So,
and vice versa.
So every slow-mo would just look genuine.
Yes, the Leon also says, I'm also not a fan of guys kicking out of their finishes 800 times during matches, usually at WrestleMania. What is the point of a finisher if it doesn't finish the match? Seems like this idea is diminishing returns.
That actually only just struck me recently, because I seem to remember at Mania, and correct me if I'm wrong, but Rusev was pinned after one. Yeah.
And Ambrose kicked out of it the next night on Raw.
That's interesting, because, I mean, that it didn't really jump out at me until that happened. And I watched that and went, oh, because I'd expected him to kick out of what was the opponent's finish. And I went into a big existential crisis about what finishers were for a little while. I was sitting in stunned silence that somebody had lost to a finisher happening the first time. And I don't think that happened in any of the other matches on that show. And I suppose WrestleMania gets a certain pass to a certain extent. But even then, really weird thing. And yeah...
The first time I kind of remember this, where like people kicking out of, you know, other people's finishes multiple times, was the kind of Rock Austin kind of matches of 15 and 17. Was there any example before then?
It wasn't quite as prevalent then as it is now. Mania is sort of a special case in the sense that you do get it in more of the top tier matches with Mania. It's funny, an earlier email I mentioned about not enough secondary finishes.
Yeah.
To end matches, and I thought, well, these days the finisher doesn't cut it in most cases, so you know, a second finish is going to get you nowhere. But the first time I remember it sort of really being sort of on the nose, if you like, was Mania 19.
Oh yeah.
You know, you've got the three leg drops from Hogan, the three F5s from Lesnar, one pedigree, coincidentally, and a long interlude in between. Rock Austin, the Rock Austin 3, there was kickouts of the stunner and that sort of thing. So it's not... I don't remember it being a frequent thing back when you first referenced, but it's becoming more and more obvious these days.
I think it really became a cliche, especially at WrestleMania. I think, as you say, it was even the lower card matches it was happening this year. But the Taker run... it's Shawn, Triple H in particular, that's when it became a real cliche for me.
I think somebody actually mentioned this in the feedback a little bit later on, about how the Tombstone got kicked out of on like four or five straight WrestleManias.
Yeah, I think that was the point where, because of the Taker limitations, it was obviously, it was a conscious smoke and mirrors attempt to, you know, and now it's become the cliche. We're getting it all the time. So
I almost feel like if we could channel it in a way, if wrestling could channel it in a way of actually embracing the idea of, okay, well, if we're not really going to do finishes anymore, we can do things where people tap out to submission holds that aren't signature ones. We can have pinfalls happen after a non-signature thing. If they could embrace the fact as a whole that, okay, well, we've kind of fucked up the whole concept of finishes, why don't we let it lower? It'd be an interesting change.
Carl is on his second beer and we are moving along. Wiretap from the FOW message board says, the opening stalemate spot. When two guys start a match with a quick series of tightly choreographed reversals, and I'm scripted to be wowed to the point of applause when they end up exactly where they started. This is the fish out of water spot that Van Damme and Jerry Lynn popularised, I will say.
God, I can understand, but I like that spot at the beginning about Van Damme and Jerry Lynn. always kind of mucked out for it.
It was cool, obviously, when Van Damme and Lynn did it, but... Yeah. I think it's a bit annoying when when you're seeing guys and they're doing the roly-poly pinfalls, and it's like they're just pushing each other through. It looks stupid. It's like they're not even trying to win the match. It's just...
Yeah. Batco10 from WrestlingForum.com says, my pet peeve is the fact that Ric Flair stole Nature Boy Buddy Rogers' entire persona and act. It wasn't a case of adopting parts of Rogers' Nature Boy persona. He just copied the whole kit and caboodle. The Nature Boy moniker, the figure four leg lock which was invented by Rogers, the blonde hair, the flamboyant jacket, the strut, and general wrestling style. With that said, I can't say I hate Ric Flair. In fact, I empathise with Ric Flair. Being the same age, as kids we both wanted to be the Nature Boy Buddy Rogers. Unfortunately, neither of us succeeded.
I'm sure, you know, Scott Steiner agrees with the email.
I hope he doesn't hear this because he will cry.
Cries when the postman says hello to him in the morning.
The memories are long,
I'm far too young and youthful to have seen anything that, that Buddy Rogers did, so I personally have no problem whatsoever with Ric Flair and his gimmick.
And he lives it and he made it his own, so
yeah,
I haven't got a problem.
He did throw in bits of Ray Stevens as well. It wasn't like he completely copied every single thing and added nothing of his own. I've spoken to this guy before. I know he's a big Buddy Rogers fan, and he gets worked up about Ric Flair just because of this very issue. So I can understand that as a pet peeve.
Yeah, I'm just worried about like 15 years' time when we get all the little John Cena knockoffs running around.
Buy shares and jorts now.
Mr. Scorpio from F4W Online says, the invisible shield around the ring that stops a face chasing a fleeing heel. Your enemy is a few feet away on the ramp. Why can't you chase him?
Yeah, I always tell myself in that instance, the floor is lava.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
floor is lava.
Floor is lava.
It's the old crossing the Rubicon theory, isn't it? You know, you go to the outside, you just don't know what's going to happen. There's lots of variables, and you know, it's a dangerous environment.
Logic bomb!
Jesus Christ. Arch Stanton from the UK Fan Forum says, performing moves that defy all logic and common sense to the point you can no longer suspend your disbelief, such as big crowds of guys gathering together around the ring to catch a tope.
Oh, I hate that.
And guys that almost voluntarily and completely consciously position themselves on a table to set up a high spot.
Oh, God, yeah.
I'm actually curious, at least for the people around the table, where's the line for you guys with that? Where is, I mean, you know, you could easily say a fucking Hurricane Rana or a flying head scissors is bullshit on so many levels, but that's very widely accepted.
I'm Irish whip.
Yeah, exactly. Running a fucking rope. What? Ah!
It is, but at least in some instances I can bullshit myself into thinking, well, it's momentum that does this, you know. It's leverage that does this. The Canadian Destroyer, I do not use that for. Okay. I hate that move so much.
There you go. Let's get it out, Carl.
It's I can appreciate why some people like it. It's aesthetically pleasing. It's very impressive. But it just defies all logic.
The C4 also pissed me off.
The C4 is another prime example of that. To the emailers reference there, I absolutely hate it when it's like a set of fucking dominoes just keeps getting restacked for the next person to jump over the ropes onto. Oh, here comes the tope. Oh, here comes the tope con Hilo. There's the Fosbury flop that Miz didn't catch. And there's the 50-year-old Scorpion coming off the top rope.
To actually hark back to the first thing we talked about, isn't it like kind of like the similar thing to when the referee is watching the referee, the same thing when the guy's on the table and he's going to move out of the way, but he's watching the opponent on the top rope, waiting for him to jump so he can move out of the way. It's like the same thing.
And you see the arm just positioning over the edge of the table to just pull himself.
The one leg is off the table so he can leap off the way, and just like, oh, this guy's moving. For fuck's sake.
On an even lesser extent to that, though, it's where you see the guy, you know, hit the ground, the other guy's going at the top, and you see the guy on the floor wriggle his way slightly closer.
Yeah.
And it's never far enough to make a fucking difference, ever. It drives me up the wall.
This one I do hate, though. I feel slightly bad because I understand exactly why they're doing it. It's in these TLC matches where they've set tables on the outside. I'm thinking of Bubba Ray here. They've set tables on the outside and they set the ladder up in the ring, and then they take like a few moments just to move the ladder left and right, adjust it so it's right for them to do the spot, almost to the point where the ladder isn't even underneath the freaking belt anymore.
SummerSlam 2000.
And then they climb up and then do the spot. It's just that moment where I know they're doing it to make sure they're doing it safely, which is obviously the key thing here, but it's just like when you're watching them adjust it and they're being really putty, and it's like, you're not even looking up at it, you're looking to the side. It's like you're just choreographing it.
Kind of in a similar vein, one of my pet peeves is the sloppy headlock into the ropes whip off, which you see in WWE all the time. I even watching the ladder match at WrestleMania 10 a few weeks ago for the Mania shows. Sean does it, and it's like, you know, the guys go, they don't even grab a proper headlock. It's like they don't even bend over. It's like
one arm around the head.
Yeah, one arm around the head, like they're hugging, and it's straight off the rope. It's so fucking, it just drives me insane every single time.
Style.
Theo Diaz from TPWW Forum says, top level announcers who don't understand the meaning of what they're saying, most specifically the misuse of calvary when they mean cavalry, and the use of the word debilitating. The word is debilitating. They're professional fucking broadcasters, for crying out loud. Mid-card title meaninglessness. There may be hope for that, but I'm not holding my breath. We'll see. And no more enhancement matches is another pet peeve of his. Cornette recently said on JR's podcast, bring them back so that you aren't constantly damaging mid-carders. What do you think about this?
I can see the logic to it, and if you probably ask me on another day, there's half a chance I'd agree with them. But by the same token, I understand the company's dilemma. It's a different age now with television. There are more options, and whilst I think it's sometimes that it's a bit hyperbolic the way they talk about it, you can see the notion of, oh, this is a squash match, let's switch over, you know, ratings get affected, advertising gets affected. So I can, whilst I appreciate the theory behind it, I can also see the company's dilemma a bit there.
Okay, moving on. Crap Game 13 from F4W says, singles feuds where the two participants end up winning the tag titles. The old Vinnie Russo special, oh. Carl. This is probably isn't the time to bring up Vince Russo for an irrational hatred, because
it's completely
perfectly irrational. Yeah. Bad Touch from Wrestling Forum says, my pet peeve is the ridiculous idea that Bret Hart is just a bitter old has-been, that he was good enough in his day, but the likes of Angle and Benoit are much better wrestlers than him. I've no idea where this ridiculous notion started or why it gained so much traction, but it irritates the shit out of me.
I think probably the reason it gets some traction is because, you know, you think of the core fan base now, they didn't see Bret wrestle in his prime. And you can go back and watch old tapes, but without sort of experiencing it at the time, it can only have so much of an impact. Whereas, you know, they'd have seen Benoit wrestle more recently, they'd have seen Angle wrestle more recently, and it's that sort of out of sight, out of mind nature that lends to this notion of Bret wasn't as good, Benoit and Angle are clearly better, sort of argument.
I don't think it helps that Bret Hart has aged hideously.
Be fair, the man had a stroke.
He looks like no, it's the hair.
No one's
like
aged worse than Flair. No one's aged worse than Flair.
I don't know, you see, Flair's had like stop-start bursts of aging.
He looks like a bullsack now.
Yeah, but when you consider what Flair's put his body through, and I'm not talking about inside the ring, it's a wonder he's alive at all, so...
Just to move forward on the Bret Hart point, I don't agree that with the idea that he's seen as a bit of old has-been. I think plenty of people have a lot of love and respect for Bret still. So.
I'd say, to be honest, it's not something of an opinion that he's regarded lower than Angle, Benoit, etc.
No, I think most people probably say above, or at least on the level.
Yeah, so maybe absolutely. It depends who you're talking to, I guess.
Yeah, it really does. He also added, people getting Bret Hart's the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be the wrong way round. I cannot put into words how much that annoys me. Actually, I'll add one here. How about Bret using the WCW during this time? Staying on the subject of Bret, Slyman, and I hope I've pronounced your name right there, emailed us and said, my suggestion is WWE's portrayal of Montreal. Their story includes half-truths, outright falsehoods, and several glaring omissions, which show just how strained this WWE gospel really is. WWE loves to make out the soul issues, were that Bret did not want a job on the way out, false, and that Bret was going to turn upon Nitro with the belt, highly impossible, slash improbable given Bret's WWF contract wasn't finished by then, and the legal battles between WCW and WWF at the time. Yes, in recent years, HBK has admitted he was a douchebag then, but they still don't go as far as informing the audience that HBK told Bret he would never lose to him on two separate occasions, despite Bret telling him that as champion he had no problem losing to Shawn in America. All of this waxes my ass so much that I think my ass will be hairless forever. So there's a bit more detail than you may have requested, but I love the email.
I'm guessing he hasn't watched the Bret versus Shawn DVD, because do reference the whole...
Bret does.
Bret's there, and he makes sure everyone knows that Shawn Michaels said he wasn't going to...
And Shawn is the great... Well, I don't recall saying that, but if he said it, then it's probably true. It's the fact that... Okay, so then even after they did that whole Bret Hart Shawn Michaels DVD, which is great...
Awesome.
Yeah, but they did that Monday Night War documentary where, again, I think the WWF perspective is again kind of forced down the throats of everybody, and it's like, did you bastards learn nothing? Just let it go. Just call it what it was and then just leave. If you want to tell the story, tell the story. If not, fuck off.
Yeah, Bret, Shawn, Vince, they all made it difficult for each other.
One Man Force from UK Fan Forum. That's one J-U-A-N, by the way. I fucking hate that SmackDown crowd noise that sounds like a seagull getting sucked up a Hoover. Dreadful. If you have to sweeten the crowd for tape shows, at least get some new audio. They've been using that fake crowd cheer for like 15 years now. It's terrible.
Pretty awful.
Yeah, I remember it on the days of metal.
takes you back. The days when you'd see Loki.
He was actually called Loki as well.
Yeah, he was called Loki.
Jeez, I'm surprised they let him do that.
Snitsky's back acne from the UK Fan Forum. I've always had an irrational hatred of lumberjack matches.
It's not irrational, they're shit.
I've never really... This is one of those match stipulation things I've never really gotten, because it never really like led anywhere. It's just like... They always treat it like it's a big deal that we're going to see, and then you see it, and it's like, this
it
sucks.
Ends the same way every fucking time.
Did you like it more when the Lumberjacks actually had the flannel shirts under? Did that do anything for you?
bit of moderate amusement perhaps, but nothing substantial, no. Mm.
A lumberjack match is like the bottom rung for stipulation match, isn't it, really? It's like, now they'll throw the occasional one out there, but there's no rhyme or reason, even less rhyme or reason than the normal booking for stipulations.
Is lumberjack the worst, or is it something on a pole match the worst?
Yeah, but you don't see him as often. You don't, and if there was,
well, not now.
And if there was, and if there was, at least there'd be like a reason, like Viagra on a pole. You know,
don't try and justify it.
The point being, there is absolutely never any rhyme or reason why a lumberjack match would be put into place. Never mind used as a booking device.
The idea is, like you said, it's typically the kind of bottom rung in the sense of okay, so we have a match with a shitty heel count out finish. So we do the lumberjack match so they can't run away, and then it always fucks up, and they do it in a cage instead. Is the old philosophy?
Yeah, but they never do that anymore.
No, of course not. Lumberjack match is the one that gets the middle votes when they do the W.com poll, you know?
And there was perfect logic to the Viagra on a pole match. The French fries couldn't get it up.
But thinking about it, though, so Kieran, logically, if they really get behind it, we could have this September's pay-per-view, WWE Lumberjack, the pay-per-view, and the all the main event matches could be Lumberjack matches. You really get behind it. You could have a theme of like redwoods around the entrance. Wait, you would?
I thought you were going to mention the freaking pole, and it was going to be a pay-per-view of just all pole
WWE
matches.
Pole.
Pole position.
Is that before or after Fastlane?
Yeah, it's a little same.
Yeah, sorry, mate.
Lockjaw from TPWW Forum says, whenever
WWE Lockjaw.
That's a good name.
It's May, it's time for Lockjaw.
That's like a Vince Russo pay-per-view. There's no wrestling, it's all promos.
Lockjaw says, whenever Michael Cole shouts for the win whenever someone goes for a pin, what else would it be for? Also, he never actually says it for the actual finish. He also says, the slow climbing of ladders in ladder matches. I'm used to it being one of wrestling's rules, but watching Mania with an outsider this year, she was just confused and wondering why all climbing the ladder so excruciatingly slow, except for when they were climbing to stop someone else. Substance J from F4W says, guy takes a bump. First thing he does as he comes to rest on the mat is adjust his mask, elbow pad or trunks. Worst case scenario, he continues to lay there after adjusting his gear, just waiting to be pinned. This is the Hulk Hogan classic, this is. Messing with his yellow tights and putting his hand through his hair before while he's selling. I use that term liberally.
So am I the only person who rearranges their gear while lying on their back? No one else does that. Oh, screw you, can all go to hell.
Pickle Bucket from the F4W board says, getting yourself into position to take a superplex looks about as fake as wrestling gets. Oh, hang on a sec, let me put my feet on the top turnbuckle, one at a time, so you can throw me over your head. Fucking stupid. Irrational, or is anybody else notice that?
Yeah, it's actually the reverse of a Frankensteiner as well. If they're originally going for like a superplex and then they move their feet onto the inside.
Yeah, it's position the leg.
Yeah. It's positioning on the top rope. Yeah.
Cleavy from the F4W board says, and this is one that I like, lazy mishmash theme music of tag teams consisting of two singles guys. This has been a WWE classic for years. Yeah, the Goldust one with Cody was. Oh, it's terrible, dude.
The old Kevin Dunn half a day Wednesday special. fucking throw them together.
Should we come up with something good? Nah. Mr. Kennedy from the UK Fan Forum says, Michael Cole's look it, look it, look it! And JBL's wah, wah, wah. They both do this at least once a show. So there you go, there's some more commentary hatred. Domo Time 2 from the Wrestling Forum says, Michael Cole is by far my number one pet peeve and isn't even close. He actually went into like 9 different reasons as to why he hated him, so I've truncated this somewhat. I just got done watching 1999 and it's astonishing to see how much worse the product and the shows get when Cole and Lawler are at the helm and not JR. It's 16 years later, no matter who you are and how complacent of a person you might be, I don't think anyone would ever say, I think Michael Cole is great, one of the best announcers ever. Literally no one would ever say that. So why, in the history of wrestling, is this guy on pace to being the longest tenured number one announced guy ever? Longer than Gorilla, longer than Vince, longer than JR, longer than Schiavone. Michael Cole is going to be known as the longest running voice of the company. How is this possible? Why is it possible? Is he the best they can do? It's his tone of voice. He's not selling what's in front of me. He never makes me feel what I want to feel during a match or a segment. Blaming Vince is bullshit. Announcers are always told what to say and what to promote, but the true greats still take what they're told and do a good job with it. So some real hatred here. Visceral hatred for Michael Cole.
Yeah, if that wasn't an email, I'd swear that he'd written that in blood, such was the anguish.
I don't hear an argument against it from you though.
No, all fair comments.
Would you rather have the bisexual doing commentary as we have nowadays?
It only took two episodes of Raw for me to appreciate Michael Cole.
I was going
to
say, we've all heard Byron Saxton. Let's move on.
Yeah. Bytor from the Wrestling Forum says, I hate most modern wrestling fans. I used to be friends with any wrestling fan I met. Wrestling was cool, so you were cool in my book if you like wrestling, regardless of what else we may or may not have had in common. The modern wrestling fan is somebody I'd likely avoid were I to meet one in real life. You're there to see the show, not be the show. You're not clever. Your juvenile chants aren't clever. My 2-year-old cousin throws less temper tantrums than the average smark, and I get the impression most of them suck at life. So there's your anti-fan post for now.
Are you sure that wasn't written by Triple H?
It might have been. He also adds, and this is one for you, Kieran, I've had this overwhelming desire to punch CM Punk right in his smug face since 2003. He's easily my least favourite wrestling personality of the 21st century.
Yep.
Slicky Tricky Damon from TPWW Forum says, I hate back body drops. Seems like a stupid risk of landing on the neck for an opening mid-match move.
Momentum, people. It's momentum that does it.
Logic bomb!
Bill Thompson from Pro Wrestling Only says, number one would be the shitty gymnastics that exposes the business. Johnny Gargano is one of the worst offenders when it comes to this, and AR Fox is catching up to him. I should never have to watch a sequence where you hold a wrist lock on a guy, walk the ropes, and then proceed to jump back and forth between the middle and top rope for a minute, while the idiot in the wrist lock just stares at you. And people cheer for this shit and think it's exciting. It's embarrassing, and watching it, I want to throw up in my mouth at how wretched it is.
I will say, in a vaguely... related point. Quite a related point. I have taken more than my fair share of rope walk moves in the ring in the past. There is nothing more awkward to take in wrestling, okay, than to have to stand there with your arm looking at the guy.
And looking it's like a dick.
Looking like a dick. And the guy's looking at you. Well, no, he's not looking at you. He's focused on walking across a fucking rope. And I'm standing there going, right, well, I could do anything right now. I could leave. Why am I here? To the point of I had a tag match just like a month back. And somebody did a rope walk move on me. And one of my partners shouted, just pull him off. And I was like, well, yeah, why the fuck can't I do that? Oh, because it's fake and I can't. I got very angry.
As a kid, I did always ask that question about The Undertaker. Like, why don't he just move or hit the rope? Or why don't he just stand there as he walks the ropes? Never understood.
That wrist lock's tight.
Yeah, wrist lock's tight.
Because he's mesmerised by The Undertaker.
You could say it's a death grip.
Oh.
You're fired, Carl. Proving that nobody is safe, Coffee from Pro Wrestling Only says, I hate Dave Meltzer. He's a terrible public speaker. Oh. Hang on, this is what he says. He's a terrible public speaker, you know, and a bad writer, you know, that has a podcast, you know, and a newsletter, you know. That's like someone that can't cook, you know, being a chef, you know.
It's not like he puts you know in his fucking newsletter.
Yeah, that'd be great if he did.
Yeah. It'd be horrible being a TV personality. Thank God he does a newsletter.
I love Dave Meltzer. I can't agree with this.
I love Meltzer.
If you've got a really bad cough, don't sit so close to the mic, though. Seriously, yeah, when you're wearing headphones...
Take note, Carl.
I've sat back every time I've coughed.
Coffee also says, buzzwords in WWE are at an all-time high and I dislike most of them. It makes everything sound so unnatural when people are talking. It's not wrestling, it's sports entertainment. They're not fans, they're part of the universe. They're not women, they're divas. These aren't wrestlers, they're superstars. Oh. That's not a belt or a title, it's a championship. And Blair Schmidt from Pro Wrestling Only also agrees, saying, so fucking tired of the constant need to say a person's nickname before saying their name in current WWE. The lunatic fringe Dean Ambrose. The architect Seth Rollins. The Demon Kane. Almost all the nicknames suck. It's repetitive, but I guess it all goes back to the buzzwords and social media and shitty announcer problems that are making the show unwatchable. And one more person who agreed, Colin Bollocks from the UK Fan Forum, says Vince's buzzwords or preferred terms for certain things being rammed into every promo hurts my tits. Each and every one of you being one that sticks out in my mind. It makes everything seem far more contrived than it really ought to. It's like the George Carlin bit on the complete dehumanization of language, from going from shell shock to post-traumatic stress disorders. I do. The one that always sticks in my craw is when they call a title match a championship opportunity. They never call it a title match. It's like that's one of those ones that reads. It's like goddamn.
Do they actually still call it the belt? Do they still call it a belt now? They stopped that.
Years ago.
Superstars and divas kind of sound slightly patronizing, but I kind of got used to that. But universe. The WWE Universe, I still can't get used to that. I fucking hate that.
Still, it's been years, but still.
I still hate it.
On a slightly tangential point from that, they did mention the each and every one of you and these things. The one thing I've noticed, and this is only coming from watching the network in the last few months and watching a lot of older shows, since the promos went purely scripted, and that's a pet peeve of a lot of people, I think, is these heavily scripted promos, we have at least avoided a lot of wrestling cliches, because you go back into those, into the 90s, and the amount of, well, the shit we all remember The Rock saying, but we forget about the fact that everyone else was using the same fucking things just because it was getting over there. The fucking smoke... The smoke has cleared in the 90s so many times. The dust has settled so many fucking times. Who's kicking up this fucking dust? Because it's settling three or four times a fucking show. It was really... That was a pet peeve for me.
And then all is said and done?
Oh, yeah.
Quite frankly. In this very ring, quite frankly.
But it's more... Happens in all walks of life, though.
And you've got... Well, a pet peeve of mine. You mentioned like people taking things that work and making it their own. The People's Elbow worked great, but seeing everybody trying to come up with their own version of that kind of move, whether it be the Kofi leg drop,
the worm.
Yeah, I mean, at least the worm got over, you know. But like you see,
ball in.
Yeah, shit like that. That really fucking burns my ass. I don't like that either. Nine Hunter from WrestlingForum.com says heel champions having their entrance to the ring first in title matches and the babyface challenger entering second. The only time this was ever explained, I really liked it, was I think it was Hell in a Cell with Lesnar and Taker when with Heyman producing as the booker at the time, told Michael Cole to say that it was the champion's prerogative when he comes out. And I always liked that. It's like that's just a little bit of nice explanation there, just that little bit, because Lesnar was entering first, Taker second.
That was Paul Heyman dropping a
logic bomb.
Except your leg.
Rocket Crip from Pro Wrestling Only says fans still calling wrestlers by their indie names even though it's been years since they were last used. If you're still talking about Tyler Black, John Moxley and Bryan Danielson in 2015, you really need to have a word with yourself. I wonder how many OVW fans still refer to Cena as the prototype.
Some of those, yeah, no, of course, Cena's fucking prototype and so on. It's just how long it takes for like a name to kind of like resonate with you, you know. Sami Zayn is now Sami Zayn. I don't think of him as Generico, you know. Steen is Owen and so on like that. But Devitt is still Devitt for me for the time being, just because I followed Devitt for so long in New Japan. It's just going to take a little while longer. It's not like I completely forget what his name is. It's just like every now and again Devitt will slip out as opposed to Balor. It's just depending on how well you know the talent.
On the podcast, I believe I've had slip ups with Danielson before because I think that's more because the way they fuck with the name. But Daniel Bryan, that's just a bit silly. Yeah. But that's the only one I trip up on repeatedly.
B Gillette 86 from the FWW message board says, I hate that the people still fucking boo John Cena. There's no reason to do so. He's not pushed down our throats. He's far from the worst wrestler. He gives and gives and gives when it comes to charity, and he's never betrayed who he is to make it where he is. It drives me crazy when people boo him now, because they only do it because they're conditioned to do so. I'm not saying go and buy a Cena t-shirt, but it's time to start showing the man the respect he deserves. This sounds like your thoughts about a year ago, Kieran, right?
3 years ago.
Oh, okay then.
Maybe not. I don't know what he was doing 3 years ago, so
I agree though. I mean, I've been on the pro. I was never as much of an anti-Cena guy as most seem to be on the webs.
No, he's clunky, but he's a fantastic babyface. Sells brilliantly. Great timing.
Has a lot of good matches.
Lots of great matches, and I hope they keep this US title open challenge going.
Yeah,
and maybe it's really fun.
That's a good idea.
But. It seems like he hasn't changed his gear. He's only got a novelty T-shirt made out of it. I'm thinking he's dropping it pretty soon.
Think so?
Yeah.
I'll get your thoughts very, very quickly if we can on this, G, because you're one of the big anti-Cena kind of, you know,
haters.
These pitchfork carrying angry villagers about the rise of John Cena. And I know that you recently said that if we were to do a trial about John Cena, you want to be on the defence, so I'm guessing your opinion's changed recently too.
I was kind of one of these blind people who just hated Cena outright, and it's just kind of like it's just sitting down and actually growing up about it and just thinking about it. And it's just like my issue isn't actually with John Cena himself, it's just more the booking of him and the character that he's kind of feels he needs to portray and so on. Because I think like he's not the worst wrestler, he's not the best wrestler by far either, but he at the same time, to his credit, he's the guy that you know 80% of the time will always bring it at a pay-per-view level. Every pay-per-view he's in a main event, usually if it's a stipulation mainly, he'll always he'll always bring out the performance and is one of the more consistent pay-per-view performers out there. We've seen it. It's more just how he's booked that just kind of annoys me.
On previous podcasts, I've mentioned how I find it hard to dislike people who I think are probably genuinely nice people. And vice versa. The Orton effect, I consider that. It's like, yes, that was a fucking great move, a really good match, but you're still a dick. But it's... you see, the thing with Cena, though, is... Even though I think he's a really nice guy, and I've been a really solid supporter of Cena, I've never, you know, I could never imagine booing Cena, but I can also never imagine cheering him as a protagonist.
Well, yeah, that's, I think, my reading of the situation totally the way. It's because the character isn't a character that a demograph like the one we cater to here could ever get behind without cringing, because it's not geared towards them, and that's... And I think part of the realisation... Remember, the company used to fight with the Cena backlash for years.
Yeah.
And then it was like, maybe they kind of like embrace their own rhetoric that actually, you know, there is a segment for him both ways. So it's John Cena. He'll get respect one day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When he retires. In 10 years' time. Nightro from Wrestling Forum says, when families are involved or they use a person's death in storylines, I get that it's used to bring more heat on the heel and to make feuds personal, but it still makes me feel really uncomfortable to watch. Mysterio and Orton, Cole and Lawler, and Taker CM Punk are the biggest examples of this. As a viewer, I hate the Eddie stuff a tremendous amount. I don't say the Bearer stuff bother me, it just seemed more like a pointless direction more than anything else. Cole and Lawler, if that's what they want to do, then I guess that's what they do. I mean, does this put anybody else off as much?
I'm sorry, I'm probably showing the failings of my memory here, but the Cole Lawler stuff completely lost on
Cole
me.
Cole did a promo saying, you'll do your mother proud, and then he said, oh, wait a second, sorry, I forgot your mum died last week. Which she did in real life. And Lawler did the greatest facial expression in the world, as only Jerry Lawler can do. That just conveyed, I am going to kick the fuck out of you at WrestleMania.
Wasn't that Jerry's idea?
Yeah, it was Jerry's idea.
Certainly, yeah.
Yeah. Sounds right. Yeah. So I don't know if that actually bothers anybody else to any kind of extreme degree, or...
I think when it's a
case by case basis.
When it's like that, and when it's, you know, Lawler's the one who get offended by it. If the guy who would be offended by it has no problem or actively supports doing it, then that's their business. The Eddie stuff, yeah, that's kind of despicable. Yeah.
It's kind of like weird. Like on a kind of like a kind of, it's hard to say, lesser note. I was thinking of that promo, that brief one that Eminem did on the Road Warrior Animal. Where something they mentioned, like your tag partner, and go, oh yeah, your tag partner's dead.
Yeah, that was pretty tasteless.
Like
stuff.
Where it's just kind of like, it's okay. It's fair enough if the person agrees to it and says, okay, I'm not going to take that personally. It's all part of the work and so on. But it's still something where, like, leave that. There's got to be a line. There's got to be something that you just leave to personal life and just leave out of the business. And I think when someone dies, it's just like, just leave it. Just leave it out of the business now. They're out of the business. Leave their name out of the business too.
I only mentioned this because obviously it came up earlier in the cast. There was the angle with Big Show's dad, which wasn't even legit, as I recall. I don't think he was in any way.
His dad had died years ago.
Exactly. So how do we feel about that? Can we go with your father has terminal cancer when he actually died fucking yonks ago? Is that fine? I know it will be with three people at this table because that's our humour just nailed to a pause. But
I think it was made up for by the boss man there in the car at the funeral. I think that makes it all up. And so, the poem.
So we can go with that. Okay, I just want to know what's acceptable here.
Kira from TPWW Forums says, the constant social media plugs, I swear I fucking hate the day Vince discovered that was a thing. Fans who try to hijack genuinely good shows, and I would say treating the fans like idiots / underestimating them, but sometimes I wonder.
The whole fucking world is obsessed with Twitter, so...
I don't know why, though. I really don't.
Vince was probably ahead... Sorry, Gio.
He's been primed to say
something. I think, yeah, when they first started it was... He's kind of good at... Vince is good at, like, going balls out with shit like this early, and it was really obnoxious when he first started doing it, but then the rest of the world kind of caught up, and it is what it is.
So yeah, you kind of used to it now, aren't you? As a
pet peeve, I'll take that even further than just the Twitter. It's just the general QVC-esque hawking of anything that has the WWE brand on it. That's anything other than actual professional wrestling. Professional wrestling or promo promoting professional wrestling. Anything else. So whether it's like the freaking Twitter or Tout or like the freaking network for $9.99. Total Divas. Or whatever film some fucktard is doing. Or like whatever guest they're having on or whatever they're doing. Or it's just like, oh, you know,
it's just, I just want to watch wrestling, and it just seems like there's less and less of it on a 3-hour fucking show. It's 20 minutes wrestling, and the rest of it is just either talking or them hocking merchandise to you.
Tree of Worlds from the FOW board with a couple of good ones here. The catapult. The worst move ever, he says. The old slingshot, you know, you're kind of getting the Boston crab and you fall back and the guy jumps in the air.
That's funny.
Every kid who ever wanted to do it in the backyard and tried it the first time, it never worked.
Yeah,
because, exactly. You know, you try to do it legit and it just doesn't actually function as a move.
Tree of Worlds also says, also, Babyface 1 just barely getting the hot tag and collapsing into the corner. Babyface 2 runs wild. Babyface 1 returns and joins the ass kicking mere seconds later.
Yeah.
Which you see a lot in current WWE tag matches. Guilty.
It's like running the 100 metres. You're out of breath, but 5, 6, 7 seconds after that, you've got your breath back and you're ready to go again.
No, you know what? I'm not going to accept this as a logic bomb. Don't even do it. Don't even do it. Because, you know what? This is one of the classic ones. You've just gotten the dog shit beaten out of you by two people for minutes at a time. It's not doing the 100 metres.
You don't understand, Liam. They are very well-trained athletes with incredible cardio regimes. They only need a small amount of recovery. Have you not played SmackDown vs. Raw? They only need a small amount of recovery to get back in.
Not to mention, circle.
Yeah, not to mention the adrenaline rush.
Wyatt Sheep Mask from the UK fan forum says, fans with £350 replica belts. I have seen, trust me, when I went to WrestleMania 28, and the amount of people I saw walking around town with the belts on their shoulders with sunglasses on, it makes you fucking sick.
I was 16. I don't want to be.
You bought one. That's fine.
I did. I was a kid at the time. But no, I'm just thinking, is like, where is it now? This, you know, I think it was like £100-something belt. And it's, you know, it's the Brock Lesnar era SmackDown. It's a very nice
belt. The Undisputed title.
That's the one. It's a really nice belt. Where is it now? It's corroding in my garage somewhere on the floor, I think. I'm absolutely honest with you. So, you know.
Wyatt Sheep Mask also says, Cena's STF. Been doing it for years now and it's still looser than a porn star's pussy. And he says, also, fans who hang around the hotel that WWE are using like deranged stalkers. Whilst I like to meet the stars too and have done when I was younger, the longest I ever did wait was 30 minutes, at which point I couldn't be bothered to wait any longer because it does come across a bit pathetic. It really does cross a line when you stand around for hours clutching an 8x10 picture of a semi-naked man covered in baby oil, hoping to catch a glimpse or get them to scribble their name. The last thing Mark Henry wants is to be pounced upon by a series of marker pens when he decides to venture outside the hotel for a Coke and some wine gums.
There's nothing in that email that I disagree with at all.
It's true, because the WWE are currently in Newcastle at the moment.
I know
a handful of
people. A lot of homeless people there.
I know a few people who've gone to that in hoping to meet certain members of the roster. I don't think there's anything wrong with like if you're queuing up for like a, you know, like a meet or greet or something like that.
I think the
more instant is with certain people. I think it's the Mick Foley storyline, something like that, where like someone like asked him while he was on the crapper. You know, like, can you sign that? And he put, was it Mick or someone? And they put the note underneath the cubicle door, like,
Heenan.
Can you sign it? Heenan or something like that. And it's just like.
And Heenan wiped his ass and gave it back.
And it's just like, what a man. Yeah, there's a time and place to ask someone for.
In a formal meet and greet that's, you know, has a time and schedule is one thing, but. Yeah, the hanging around outside the hotel just hoping to catch them when they're coming in or leaving is another story altogether.
Licking their windows, don't do that.
I asked George Michael for an autograph in the toilet once.
The Amish Sheik from F4W says, and this is a great one, encountering non-fans who always have to ask, you know it's fake, right? As if they're privy to some well-protected ancient secret, then proceed to point out reasons why it's fake by making statements that are even faker than what really happens. Number one, it's not real blood, they use ketchup packets. First off, I think it'd be pretty easy to see a retro reach into his tights, tear off a ketchup pack and smear it on his face. Secondly, have you ever seen ketchup? The only similarity to blood is that it's red. They look nothing alike. I also like the alternative, don't they keep a ketchup bottle in their tights? Which would be a bit noticeable, don't you think? And number two, they always put their hands up when they get hit by a chair. I don't know about you, but if I was in a real fight, I'd put my hands up too if I noticed someone charging at me with a steel chair aimed at my head. Somehow, these doubters accept the physics of whipping someone into the ropes.
Yeah, so fuck the world of non-wrestling fans. This drives me insane. Like, the whole world of entertainment is fake.
Yeah.
You fucking morons. Wrestling is like the only thing that knows what it is. in the world of entertainment today. So yeah, fuck the lot of you. Absolutely. Kardashians.
Absolutely.
Fuck off.
Nothing is faker than reality television.
It's the actual term itself and how they go about it.
The Ideal Stranger from Wrestling Forum says, "I hate the fact that entrance music is cut for certain wrestlers to accommodate ads. The entrance is part and parcel for the wrestler, and if you cannot present him as a package, how do you expect him to get over?"
3 hours every week. You don't need to see everyone's entrance every fucking week because the whole show
YouTube
becomes,
it.
The whole show becomes a repeat. It's more like the circus. You need to change things up.
Yeah, if the person in question is so weak that you need to have their entrance to buy into it, then maybe they're not all they're cracked up to be in the first place.
You tell Taker that.
Yeah, you never seen. Yeah, good point, actually.
Yeah, I get the point, but if he's wrestling once, if he was doing that fucking entrance every week on
Raw.
He
did, though.
He did, you know.
What is the matter with you two? That was prime logic bomb territory there. You just glossed over it.
We can cut it in, right?
Yeah.
Unfit Finley from the UK Fan Forum says, "Lazy, crap storytelling. I don't think it's a coincidence that my interest in WWE has waned at a time that they've got a ridiculous amount of TV to write each week. It must be an extremely hard job, but when you build stuff up like the Who Sent the Text to Nash mystery a few years back..."
That was me.
"I want a decent payoff..."
Expensive, that's international and shit. What was on it that was so important?
You'll never know.
"I want a decent payoff that makes sense."
Not is that what he said?
"I want a decent payoff that makes sense, yeah!
That text doesn't make any sense."
It took me the Booker T note.
I still remember, Carl. "I want a decent payoff that makes sense. Not Nash stole Triple H's phone and sent the text about attacking Punk to himself for some reason." That's a pretty good one. Again, this goes back to that thing that JN Lister said at the start about you don't need to make sense, it's pro wrestling. That logic does absolutely suck.
It's like that inconsistency. I think in like quite recently the whole they brought back briefly the anonymous GM
and stuff. Oh, yeah,
even though it's like we know it's Hornswoggle, like we haven't forgot this. So why is it anonymous again? We know who the fuck it is. It's just like it's just the inconsistencies of storylines. They think that we've forgotten, but like maybe the kids have, but we fucking don't.
Yeah, well they want people to pay attention to their show so much, then they actually whatever. Yeah Baby from the Wrestling Forum says, "The NWO is his pet peeve. Hall, Nash and Hogan got paid more than the rest of the roster combined. Then the majority of the time they put on boring main events and 5-minute appearances online where they perform to a sliver of their ability. I just don't get why everyone loved them so much. The presentation was genius, but did they have to go over everyone, and did every fucking match have to end in some bullshit swerve or schmarz ending? So overrated."
Well, Scott Norton and Stevie Ray, if I'm not mistaken, both got paid $750,000 a year.
Yes, they did.
So, you know, yes, Hogan, Nash and Hall made a killing, but a lot of guys didn't do too badly out of that WCW run.
I'm not sure if that's a great defence to what you just said.
Okay, well, maybe not, but is anyone going to suggest the NWO didn't have a time and place around this table?
Absolutely.
Perfectly fine.
I feel like we've been over this.
Yeah, I know. That's why I was just going
Number 12.
The cheap money remark.
Yeah, number 12, I think, the NWO show that we did. Crazy Edgar from TPWW Forum says, "Wrestlers selling like death 8 minutes into a match. We are told that they have some of the greatest athletes in the world, so what do they blow up and milk non-existent drama?"
The Dolph Ziggler die after a punch syndrome for baby
faces. Yeah, that's a bad one for you, isn't it?
Yeah, really do. It's like the anti-steamboat. What was it, like four moves, make sure you do something. If it's not a move, your posture, you know, communicate with the crowd, you know, at least once every 4 moves. Just to die straight away, it really grinds my gears.
Yeah, that's clarify, the whole issue with Dolph Ziggler selling is what we're talking about here, where it, you know, instead of doing that slow progression, like you said, with Steamboat, it'll take one bump and be dead.
Yeah. It's one of those with Ziggler where I think he said 8 minutes in the email, didn't he? But with Ziggler, it doesn't matter if it's 3 minutes or 30 minutes. If he wins the match, it's the same arm raised, hair fucked up, holding the neck tilted to one side thing. I'm really not as big on Dolph Ziggler as some other people are, just for the record.
Another one here from Crazy Edgar. "When the Authority plots their evil plan out loud in front of a camera like a Bond villain." The music that WWE uses is ludicrously terrible. Don't disagree with that at all.
See Nickelback and Papa Roach. Drowning Pool. Saliva.
Come on, Carl.
Kid Rock. Limp Bizkit 5 years after their relevance. Help me if I'm forgetting any, folks.
I don't
Oh, fuck it, they're all terrible.
Polatron from the FOW message board says, I hate how pins have to face the hard camera. Watch Ryback, for example. He has to waste another second to float over to pin a guy after the shell shock.
A belly down spinneroony just getting pinned.
Yeah, it's as they, yeah, not just the pin, but as they hit the finisher. It's the same with Ryback, same with Cena. Cena always turns to look at the camera before he hits the FU every fucking time.
It's the only thing they teach me in NXT is to hit your move and look at the hard cam.
Yeah.
Shawn Michaels taught Great Khali during a Royal Rumble once.
Yeah, look at that. Actually, what was that one a few years ago? There was a great one on Raw where, like, at least, like, Santino and it was some schlub where Santino hit the mat and some.
Well,
Otunga
was in there for a start.
Otunga, it was Otunga. Otunga fucked it up. He went to pin him, and then he realized his back was the hard camera. So he did this really bizarre like 270-degree spin just because he was in the way of getting his foot on the ropes. And he was like, that's just the most terrible looking thing I've ever seen in my life. Bad news. Gertner from TPWW forum says, fans who try and get themselves over with retarded chants. So that's kind of similar to what we've had before. And I hate that every wrestler looks the same. 6'6" to 6'2", 210 to 230 pounds. There used to be wrestlers of all shapes and sizes. It adds variety. So we got a little bit more of this lately, though, with the Bray Wyatts of the world.
Yeah,
Rowans and Harper.
Notice it's the guys that don't have the archetypal body shape that tend to get that initial reaction from the fans. I mean, didn't they even go as far at one point as to mention Ziggler again? Didn't they have him cut his hair?
Get rid
of the highlights.
The new and improved Dolph Ziggler for one week.
I was going to say, like, it lasted no more than a couple of weeks, did it? But yeah, you know what it's like with this company. They've got their sort of the cookie cutter mode. And I think it was probably more prevalent just after the Attitude Era, I think. So around 2003, 2004, that's the time when you're getting the Graniers and the Duprees and the Rob Conways. Oh, ironically enough, La Resistance. but there, I'm sure there were other examples. I just can't think of them off the top of my head.
Fignuts from TPWW Forum says, Dean Ambrose's rebound clothesline, or more specifically, the lack of selling afterwards. Like, I don't mind that he powers through the attack to come off the ropes with a clothesline, but for God's sake, sell the fucking initial blow afterwards. I remember Rollins hitting an enziguri clean on Ambrose, and he did the rebound thing and posed afterwards like nothing happened. I just thought he kicked you square in the head. Fall down after your dumb clothesline.
Did anyone, you know, at Mania, he did it. He did the spot to knock a ladder over.
Yeah.
But the ladder was off at an angle. But you can only rebound straight with the rope. So he rebounds straight, runs forward, and then turns 45 degrees into the ladder. It was just a terrible momentum problem.
Right? Smooth.
Yeah.
Smooth. Yeah.
They should have readjusted that ladder slowly and carefully, inching it just slightly so it was just in the right position.
See, if he had a six-sided ring, he could come off at all different angles and hit all kinds of manner of obstacles.
A company should do that.
Yeah,
they might become successful.
Take that bet.
Fake Plastic Trees from Pro Wrestling Only says, the wet look. I don't mind someone like Sid coming out drenched in water as it makes him look psycho, nor do I mind Lesnar coming out to the ring drenched in water as it looks like he just got finished lifting weights and is ready to kick ass. But what is Bo Dallas's excuse? The guy looks like he just took a lap in the pool before coming to the ring to cut a promo. Seth Rollins comes out in his pleather spandex getup soaked in water. Why? It doesn't make him look tough or sleazy or like an architect, but rather someone coming out of a dunk tank. It's time for this to be drastically scaled back.
We see.
Oh, here we go.
No. Athletes warm up. And when you warm up, you sweat. And so a nice, refreshing showering of oneself before one has to perform is the most logical thing to do. Plus, it looks cool.
Okay, fair enough then. He follows up, follows up with...
Logic Bomb!
Oh, it's back! Terrible. This is the worst gimmick I've ever heard on any podcast, and you should be ashamed of yourself. Carl, you are no longer permitted to drink beer when we do a show. Kieran, you got no excuse, man. Fake Plastic Trees follows up with internet hate in 2015. WWE will run a graphic to talk about how many Twitter and Facebook followers the company has. WWE will also release a graphic touting how socially interactive WrestleMania 31 was. They'll make trips to Google, Facebook, and Twitter HQ. Then after all this, they will have one or more personalities cut a promo about how stupid the internet fans are and how the internet doesn't matter. That is not said or done in a cheeky way. Everyone tossing out this opinion is dead serious. But then again, if you're not subscribed to the network, then you're a moron and you're left out by the league commentators every week. Imagine WWE being hypocritical somewhat on their stance on people if you don't agree with them. HLSXN from the UK Fan Forum says, Daniel Bryan's opponents not knowing that after he backflips off the top turnbuckle, he's going to duck their clothesline and hit one of his own. Does nobody study tapes? This actually ties into something that Air Raid from the UK Fan Forum emailed us in and said, my biggest biggest pet peeve in wrestling is contrived looking sequences where the wrestler on offense relies on his opponent doing something exactly the same in every match, which makes it predictable and fake looking, and the opponent looks stupid. I hate the way that a wrestler will magically fall onto the middle rope for Rey Mysterio 619 even though they never do it in any other matches. But by far the worst offender is John Cena's comeback sequence. Every match without fail, the heel will absorb two tackles from Cena, but then throw a punch which Cena ducks and hits the protoplex. This always makes me groan. I understand the wrestler on offense always doing moves in sequence once he's in a rhythm. Bret Hart famously did it for years. But it's illogical to believe that every wrestler's reaction to being tackled twice by John Cena is to throw a wild haymaker. It makes them look stupid for not studying Cena, because if they've watched any of his previous matches, they'd know that throwing that punch is exactly what Cena expects. I'm going to go apeshit the first time anyone is smart enough to feint a punch, but when Cena ducks, kick him square in the chops. Fuck that sequence. Ramstein Mad from TPWW Forums also agrees and says, I hate watching routines never get learned by the roster. Cena has been doing the two tackles for 10 years now, yet people still insist on throwing the haymaker afterwards. Same for Ambrose falling into the ropes, you'd think people would know what to expect by now. That's a pet peeve of a lot of people, that kind of similar comeback. Kofi's guilty of that too.
Yeah, it's just, it's like, it's wrestling cliches have been there forever. In terms of the actual tackle, if you've seen the whole world take two tackles every single match off John Cena for the last 10-15 years, maybe if you're in the ring with him, he hits one tackle, oh fuck, the second one's coming, boom, he hits you with it because he's so athletic, you're pissed off at this point, you are fucking steaming, I knew it was going to happen, I'm gonna punch this fucking idiot in the face. You go, and before you know it, you said you're emotional, John's lulled you into his false sense of security, boom, protoplex, it's over.
Oh, actually, I don't agree with that at all. If Brock Lesnar in the UFC, let's just say for argument's sake, counted every attempt at a double leg with an uppercut, would you go for a double leg the exact same way that everybody else has failed? Air Raid also says, I can't stand cage matches where you can win by escape rather than pinfall or submission. I think it's complete nonsense when a feud escalates to that level of hatred, you'd want to win by just leaving the fight rather than actually decisively beating your opponent. That's actually a pretty good one, I think.
It is, and I agree wholeheartedly. The only thing I'd say is, from my wrestling, sort of, you know, I was going to say wrestling experience, like I'm some sort of fucking grizzled veteran. My watching experience, obviously, was WWF as a kid. So I've only ever known the cage match in the sense of escaping as well.
Yeah. But with cage matches, though, it's not really that a feud these days is escalating to the point of violence and you put them in a cage. That's certainly the way it used to be. Not anymore. We've got different matches now of escalate to a certain point. Now, the cage is part of the gimmick where the heel needs to be trapped in for a reason. And so the heel being able to escape makes logical sense, because that's all part of that kind of feud, where the face would probably still go for the pin. I agree, too many faces trying to escape. But you get most of it nowadays, though, is the heel will try to escape, the face will pull him down, and the face usually goes for a pinfall off it. So I think that cage matches have just changed and evolved from what they used to be, really.
Well, that was I think further to that point, that's how the concept in sort of storyline terms was created for the Hell in a Cell, wasn't it? It was to trap Michaels in so he couldn't get away, so he's one-on-one with Taker. Of course they expose it somewhat and he manages to get out of the cell anyway. Great match. Anyway, by the by.
Tiger Rick from the UK Fan Forum says, people who have finishers they could hit at any time but don't. The Big Show's punch being the obvious one. He's in the position to hit that thing a million times a week, but only does it when he's ready to end the match. It's so shit. I do think that the punch might be the laziest finisher in the history of wrestling.
I know this has been said a million times, but that's a closed fist. And it Roman Reigns as well. It's like, I actually in my head thought that, oh, they've just dropped the closed fist rule. I can't remember if it was on Mania or if it was on the Raw before Mania. One of the refs actually does the whole open hand in a different match thing, and that really pissed me off. Yeah. That is the definition to me of a pet peeve, because it's fucking retarded and pointless. But why? Why is he allowed to punch him? Why are those two allowed to punch and no one else is allowed to? What's special about them, Vince? What's special about your two boys who are allowed to punch?
you mentioned pet peeve, and you mentioned it there, the Superman punch.
Really?
God, do
really?
I hate the Superman punch.
I like
punch.
That.
The whole point of the punch is you're supposed to have a steady base to swing from, not jump in the air like a twat, take away all semblance of the punch. Oh, sorry.
I'm deadly, so I'm not even going to drop the bomb sound this time. It's from MMA, where the guy is faking a leg kick and turns it into an overhand right. That's the logic behind the move.
In MMA, do they also stand in the corner, make a stupid sort of growling noise, and punch the mat?
Some do.
Tiger Rick also says getting up. Also says getting someone up in a gorilla press in a battle royal and then not launching them over the fucking ropes. Yeah. The old Davey Boy special.
Oh, that's a good one. What about Undertaker and the hitting the snake eyes instead of the tombstone? You know, they're more or less on the shoulder ready, or, you know.
Yeah.
You've got to, in wrestling, yeah, if you've got, it's like if John Cena picked someone up in a fireman's carry position and went, oh, this time I'm going to do TKO.
Yeah.
But no, that reminds me, though, with rumbles and shit. I can't, what was the year of the first Taker Shawn? The Mania Taker Shawn thing.
25.
Right, 25.
2009.
So that rumble that year, I watched that in a Canadian cinema, and that rumble had four times where somebody went to the top rope in the Royal Rumble match.
Yeah.
Fuck off. Absolutely fuck off. There is only one way to get eliminated in that match, and you are going to perch your ass on the top rope. One person springboarded when there were 10 other people in the ring, and I think it was Carlito,
probably,
I think.
Probably Kofi.
It's like, oh, it might have been Kofi. I can't remember.
Or Shelton, it was one or the other.
You mentioned the Rumble. How many times during the Rumble do you see someone go for the 10 punch? That was another Davey Boy special in the 90s. He did it plenty of times during that 95 Rumble.
Well, he never won, so you know.
It serves him right, doesn't it?
Moron. Because he's bizarre, Carl. That's why he does it. Tiger Rick says, JBL being the most half-assed heel in wrestling history. He smiles whenever the camera's on him, and he backs down all the time. G Bacon 85 from the UK Fan Forum. This is a bit of a strange one. The random shouting like Dolph Ziggler does when he comes out and does his terrible entrance. Oh, you know what time it is. You know Cincinnati. Just awful. You've expressed your disdain for Dolph Ziggler here, Carl. Is this part of why you hate him?
Disdain may be a stretch. I just think he's terribly misused. His mannerisms, everything. It's just, you know, it screams arrogance. It's nothing. To me, I look at Dolph Ziggler, there's nothing that I think a person can relate to. There's nothing I find particularly likeable about him as a babyface. And things like that certainly don't help. Though I would say from that emailer, maybe I'm not as alone as I thought when it comes to Ziggler.
If that guy was upset with Dolph Ziggler talking, then was he equally pissed off when CM Punk used to shout it's clobbering time?
I was about to bring
or
up the same
fucking Ryback is saying, you know,
wake up. No, I've got to say the clobbering time one did always bug me, because it's like, well, for a start, you're not wearing a watch, this is completely ridiculous, but
does the world want a bunch of baby faces that walk out and don't do anything?
I was going to say I'm not
like, it worked for Steve Austin.
I'm not as offended. I'm not as offended. I understand his point about how it's like irrelevant, pointless stuff screaming at the crowd. Now it's just it seems very overbearing in some respects, so I can understand that if that's his point.
The one thing I would say when it comes to baby facing the entrance is the old, regardless of the situation of the match, you know, there are enough times, and I don't want to turn into this into a Cena basher here, but there were too many times where it would be a serious build to a match and he'd still come out and do the talk to the camera. And it'd still be the salute sort of thing. You know, there is a time and a place where you don't do your same entrance, you don't slowly walk out, you sprint like a madman, like Randy Savage did on several occasions. You sprint like a madman, or you just walk with the, you know, you get Austin's bad motherfucker walk, and you just look like you've got a face and you're like you're about to kill someone.
I've got to say that brings me to the point of the recent WrestleMania where Cena came out, and I think it was my brother who pointed this out, is wasn't the whole point of the match being a very patriotic thing?
Yeah.
Would it have killed Cena to carry a flag or wear a flag? Or and then he holds up his own piece of merchandise where he couldn't be holding up a flag. He holds his up rag. His own merchandise towel instead. I do always remember when Rey Mysterio used to do his jump pad entrancey fucking thing, and he did that even for like blood feuds and stuff, and so you just imagine him stewing under the stage, like, oh, I'm really angry, but I'm just gonna stand here and wait until he shoots me in the air a few feet rather than just storming out.
I'm pretty certain he did that for his entrance when it was the, you know, Dominic's custody ladder. Sort of
his son's hanging in the balance, and he still does his entrance. But the thing is, when you have things that are so established like that, you can deviate from them so well if you really wanted. The Ultimate Warrior walking out of WrestleMania 7 instead of running.
It gives that moment more credence. And to your point about Cena, I think the reason it's so frustrating with Cena is because when he doesn't try and do too much of the comedy skits, and when he doesn't try to do the sort of water off a duck's back type of promo, He cuts one hell of a fiery promo.
Yeah, he can.
He's fantastic at it.
Derek R. Hubbard from F4W says, Alberto Del Rio's obvious leg slapping on his kicks drives me nuts. Well, thankfully we don't have to be driven nuts by that anymore.
Yeah, who cares? He's fucked off, so.
Yeah.
I wonder if he was doing that whilst he was beating the guy up there. He's the back.
Rob Hart from F4W says, when someone does a twisting backflip off the top to the floor instead of rolling out and punching the guy in the face. The dives, the pretty dives.
I feel that Kofi Kingston could hurt someone more on a dive than he could punching them in the face. So I can buy it for certain people.
If it was if it was Stan Hansen, we'd be having this discussion for sure. But
jeez, I'm not taking a punch from Stan Hansen. You seen Vader's eye?
I'm not taking a corkscrew moonsault from Stan Hansen. Fuck that.
Too many guys do that dive through the middle of the ropes. I think that's a problem with wrestling in general. Too many guys having the same moves.
I think somebody else actually did mention this. I'm not sure if we'll get to it, but somebody else did mention everybody does the tope.
Yeah,
fucking agents got to take the heat for this. It's like, surely why you have agents is so you can lay shit out and don't actually duplicate stuff. Like, that's the most basic thing.
It's certainly a small enough pool to where you think they can club together and say, right, Brian's doing the tope. So we don't need Ambrose to do it.
We don't need Harper to do it.
And not that any of those, not that either of those two guys do it badly. Or I'm sure I've seen Rollins do it on occasion. It's not that any of them do it predominantly worse than anyone else. But you just think, guys have movesets or moves that you should associate with them in theory. The thing is, Harper should be busting it out, maybe a handful of times a year. And you'd think that the guys could just sort of get their heads together and just go over that and just talk, damn it.
T. Lynch 106 from F4W comes with a few. He says, title matches on house shows. I mean, what is the point? Give us a cool tag match or a non-title match so we at least don't know who's going to win. The commercial break during TV matches. Never been a fan, and it's led me not being able to watch the shows live at times. When people say wrestling is fake, or that everyone watches is an antisocial, unadjusted loser who lives in their parents' basement. Number four, I feel the trolling amongst wrestling fans is at an all-time high. It's something I've never really understood. Feel it's a waste of time, and it pops no one. And number five, handicap matches. Any love for handicap matches around the table?
They are, I'm not going to come across as the big defender, they're criminally overused now, but I think in a story that has the right parameters, I think a handicap match is perfectly justified.
Yeah.
The problem with the handicap matches, and I'm certainly not the first to say this, is there isn't a good finish, if you know what I mean. Neither way of... like, if the two guys win, then who gives a shit if it's a handicap match? The other guy wins. That really fucking sucks for the other guy. It makes no sense. So there's no... whatever finish you do in a handicap match, shit's all over everything.
No one really wins.
Yeah, nobody wins.
And I disagree. I disagree. If you're trying to build sympathy for a babyface, I think it can work absolutely fine. The problem is where you get situations such as, I'm not sure if it was 2 or 3 years ago, and I might be going too far back, where they had 2 3-on-1 matches on one pay-per-view. You had Punk against the Shield.
Oh, yeah.
And Bryan against the Wyatt family, if I'm right there. So when you do things like that, it completely dilutes it. But if, Steve Austin in a handicap match during the height of his popularity could mean something against the corporation if you wanted to build a bit of sympathy for him. I'm not saying a handicap match is the be-all and end-all, and I agree, endings can be formulaic, but I think in the right circumstances they can serve a purpose still.
I think that the biggest one there for me is the commercial break during the TV matches. Again, it's one of those things where the whole, you see the match for 1 minute, go to a break, come back, 90 seconds, the old end of the TNA classic.
And what... The commercial break is bad enough, but the worst part about it is that it always comes back with the heel having a rest hold on.
Oh, you've already stole the words out of somebody else's mouth.
Oh, I apologise to that emailer profusely.
It's not just when it's in the middle of the match. It's just when, you've gone to commercial, you've come back, they show you a promo, a backstage one, then go to commercial again. And you've literally been back for 3 minutes. It's just so they can fit as many in as possible. And it's like, go... fuck yourself. It's just I can't stand commercial breaks.
Splash from F4W says, the superplex always annoyed me. Why hurt yourself doing a move?
I always
nitpicky or genuine pet peeve.
I don't think there's anyone growing up who didn't look at a Russian leg sweep and go, hold on.
I always did. They're doing the exact same motion and landing at the same time. What the fuck? I've had this rant to you before, haven't I, Luke?
We've ranted at each other. The side effect always had the same problem. There's loads of these moves where you're taking the same move.
No. See, it's momentum again, people.
What's that over
momentum.
There?
Momentum.
There's a whistle.
What's that?
There's a whistle in the wind.
When when Bret Hart is doing it, he's got his arm around the neck of the other person, so he's creating a whiplash effect for them, whereas he's only falling back.
Drop it like it's hot, Carl.
He's not getting it at all.
I think it was the Ric Flair-Barry Windham match I was watching, in which the fantastic Jess Body Ventura, actually mentioned something along those lines, but not with a superplex, but a normal suplex, that Windham hits on Flair, and then Windham starts selling it himself, that he's hurt from the move, and Jess just turns around and goes, paraphrasing, something along the lines, I don't understand suplexes, this is why I always prefer to do body slams myself, because I'm not hurting myself when I'm doing a body slam like when I'm doing a suplex. Because, you know, the guy doing a suplex is also landing on his back
so
as well.
So there you go, splash. Jesse the Body Ventura agrees with you.
There you go. But this is only vaguely related, but it suddenly snapped into my brain. Was it AJ Styles who used to pick someone up for a suplex, put them down on their feet and neck break them? Because yeah. Fuck me, that pissed me off you've so got, badly.
You got him 6 feet in the air upside down and you put him down on his feet. I've got one for you. I want to see how everybody else kind of feels about this one. We mentioned Ric Flair, you mentioned him there, which is why this came to my mind. Guys like Flair and Shawn Michaels taking the same trademark bump no matter who is wrestling them.
Comes under the realm of wrestling, acceptable wrestling cliches.
Okay.
I concur.
It is definitely weird to have trademark elements based on other people's offense, though. I think that purely based on other people's offense.
It's a part of the performance you expect to see, so that's why they keep doing it.
And that's why my brother left so bitterly disappointed when Kidman didn't do the Shooting Star Press on some fucking show and he did the BK Bomb instead. Oh. And you know, my brother was pissed off about that for weeks. I bet he'd still remember it now as how pissed off he was. He was like, well, to be fair, he was a little kid at the time. He was close to tears that he never got to see the Shooting Star Press. So that's a pet peeve of mine. If you've got a move that's really great and over, you know, do it. Don't have a secondary finisher that shit.
Well, this is the thing, because Flair's justification for doing it in every match was that he was a big Ray Stevens fan. Obviously, it was Ray Stevens' bump. He went to see Ray Stevens live, and he didn't do it, and he hated the fact that he went and didn't get to see the Ray Stevens bump in the corner. So he always made sure to put it in every match, so that if anybody came to see Flair do it, they didn't leave disappointed for that same reason.
Part of the act.
If only Flair could have done a Shooting Star Press.
As a sell.
I thought that was part of Space Mountain.
It might be. Undefeated Steak from the UK Fan
That's
Forum.
That's five! Oh.
It was, that wasn't quite as bad a pun, though, as the others. That was acceptable.
Yeah, but if I don't take that one, I don't think I'm going to get to five. So I'm having it.
He'll take the assist.
Undefeated Steak from the UK Fan Forum says, Raw being 3 hours long, fucking hate it. I don't even bother to watch it on Fast Forward, I just avoid it. Every weekly wrestling show should be 1 hour long, and Raw should be two. If Raw overruns, it's longer than the good, the bad, and the ugly. No wonder Lesnar's the only guy who they have who is properly over. He barely even shows up on Raw. How is somebody meant to be entertaining, must-see, and irrelevant when they've got to go out and do 20-minute segments every week? This is obviously a very common argument that the kind of beleaguers people these days.
Yeah, the notion that the weekly TV show is longer than their important pay-per-views, you know. It speaks for itself, really, doesn't it?
Indeed.
And it just all leads to a perpetuation of the clichés everyone seems to take offence at as well, so. Ooh. Oh, I like. Did that came? Yeah, no, yeah.
TDK from UK Fan Forum says, Divas running the ropes. They stop short and just put their arm across the top rope. They have little to no effect on the ropes to warrant any sort of momentum in the opposite direction.
Someone's been listening to Alvarez talk about AJ Lee, haven't they?
Actually, I've got another one for you, because this one always fucking drives me crazy. No, not so much now, we don't hear it so much now, but Divas, Kelly, I'm thinking of you, screaming when they wrestle. That is just absolute turn the channel when they do the takedown and start screaming like a banshee,
the grabbing of the hair and hitting the head against the mat.
I think Melina was another bad one for that, wasn't she?
Oh god.
Fraser B from the UK Fan Forum says, another thing I hate is the heel authority figure. McMahon and Austin had an amazing run in 98-99, but it feels like that basic premise has been the template for the booking of WWE, TNA and countless other groups ever since, and I can't stand it.
Yep. Said it before, the gimmick was dead 10 years ago for me. Well, probably more than that, so.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was played out by the time Vince fucked off in 99. It's one of those things, again, that the lack of creativity, unfortunately. It's like the most easy cliche to fall back on now.
Yeah, as much as I would like to think that they would have just sort of put it on the shelf had it not been for the USA Network and I forget the president's name now. Bonnie Hammer, that was it.
Yeah.
Who referenced during a press release that she liked the McMahons being involved on TV and that sort of thing. So as much as I like to think that they would have put it to one side had it not been for her intervention, I still think that company would have just leached onto it.
Shishin KOTF from TBWW Forum says, the same five legends at all the throwback shows, Duggan, Slaughter, Piper, etc. Also, why don't they have names for teams they just throw together? Cesaro and Tyson Kidd, yawn.
Yeah, how hard is it to come up with a name for someone?
I know, but that would suggest that they've put some thought into their tag division, which, as we all know, they most certainly have not.
Who's going to buy that T-shirt that says Cesaro Kid on it? Well, honest to God.
Well, yeah, but at the same time, just look at the previous history at the moment of naming their tag teams. You know, you mentioned Ed Boom, you know, like Road Scholars, Team Hell No. You know, they haven't been coming up with great names recently anyway, and it doesn't fucking matter because they split the teams up anyway.
Well, you can at least get 6 months worth of merchandise sales, though.
They'll split them up by SummerSlam.
Yeah, but you've already got them. You've still got the money from the merchandise sales before that.
I'm baffled. No, they're
on a pre-show WrestleMania. No one's buying any of their t-shirts.
I like Kid and Cesaro, but no matter what you do, who's buying Kid and Cesaro t-shirts no matter what you call them? They're not going to be a heavy... Oh, well,
they bought a couple.
Stinger fan from the Wrestling Forum says, my biggest one is the idea that the WWE wants one and only one top guy who dominates the landscape for years to come and only put one guy in the position to succeed and spite everyone else who may be better than their golden boy. Is this something that you actually see as a detriment? I know a lot of people can kind of romanticize about the Austin Rock scenario. That was a very kind of that was an anomaly in wrestling history. The idea of building behind one guy really is. I mean, it really only takes one star.
In fairness, that's it's going to be harsh for me to say because considering I'm a Rock fan. But even with that, you know, anomaly that they say about, but the Rock was always positioned behind Austin.
And don't you forget it
until right? You know, they put him as the lead. They put him as the lead heel against Austin, but he was always behind Austin until Austin went away with the neck surgery. Then Rock became the top guy. So it's only just the fact that Austin was away that Rock was able to, rightfully so, become the top guy.
You really don't want to... Sorry, I thought you were done. Fuck you.
So that's why I think it's not really an anomaly. They took their turns, basically.
He pretty much was done, it turns out. But no, I mean, you don't want to divide the kids, because you want the kids to know who to cheer at the end of the day. If you had Cena and another guy who were clearly on the same level... there's a risk there because, you know, the smart fans will cheer who they want to cheer, but you absolutely can control the kids. You really, really can.
I understand what you're saying about there being, it really does only take one guy. That's absolutely true, and I understand the company's logic in it because that's the way they've always built during their strongest periods, really. But I think the business model has changed to such a degree with the network now where I don't think they have to put all their eggs in one basket with one guy. I think they can have a core of people. And you do always have that misfortune. You know, that G reference there, you had the anomaly in the sense that Austin went down with a neck injury. You could go to The Rock. Mm. You know, if Cena had gone down over the last 5 or 6 years... who would you have really gone to then? There would have been no one even remotely as prepared as Rock was for the Austin spot.
Funnily enough, Carl, what you just mentioned there about the not needing the necessity of one guy. Funnily enough, Cena said the exact same thing in that Jericho podcast when Jericho asked him who did he think was going to be next, and Cena answers back thinking like, well, looks like Roman Reigns is going to be the guy, but he says, in the future, I don't think it's going to be any one guy anymore because it's now about WWE, the brand, as opposed to, you know, now people go to a city saying, oh, WWE's here, let's go and see WWE. Well, back in the day, it used to be, Hogan's in town, let's go and see Hogan.
To a degree, I agree that that's what the company wants.
That's what Cena was saying.
Yeah, but I don't think the reality of the world is that at all.
It just takes me back to when they had the brand split, and it would come to the UK, and people would go, oh yeah, WWE's coming in, and then you'd have to ask the question, hold on, which roster's coming? Because, you know, it is a brand, but there were two very distinct levels, and it's still kind of that thing.
Wrestling is always star-driven.
Precisely.
Regardless of what Vince wants. Smelly Meatball from TPWW Forum says, wrestlers being horrible with selling moves and suddenly acting like nothing happened once the match ends.
I think you could say Sting Triple H at Mania. That actually really did irritate me a little bit. So a sledgehammer shot and then just the no selling your handshake.
The handshake bothered the hell out of me.
Yeah.
Well, this is the concept. But I mean, there was no selling there. That just kind of confused me from someone who's been wrestling that long.
Smelly Meatball also says, outside of a couple of wrestlers, monster beast type pushes for big men, since those either fail badly or completely fall apart once the first big loss happens, makes all the squashing that's done beforehand seem useless in the end.
Everyone has a shelf life.
Everyone does have a shelf life, and for that kind of a character, I mean, the express purpose of that build is to make is to put over the one guy who beats him in the end. I see the point, though, in terms of if they're going to put all this effort into a guy, and there is more, we've got this kind of situation with Rusev now.
I was going to say, it's very much topical in terms of what happens to Rusev going forward.
They can either protect him or not from here, and
well, I mean, the next pay-per-view is going to be Cena Rusev again, right?
Which
does anybody think Rusev's going over?
No, and that's not good.
Yeah.
Well, for him personally. My Final Heaven from TPWW forums says that the hyperbole for grinding into us that a finisher is supposed to be the most lethal thing known to man, when thousands of wrestlers have been using said move as a transition in matches for 50 years, i.e. anyone else on earth does a camel clutch, and the announcers react with all the urgency of reading a soggy phone book. Fucking Rusev does so much as look at the back of somebody's neck, and it's all shrieking growl, accolade, accolade, no man can escape.
I can do an armbar, but it's not as good as Ronda Rousey's.
Touche. Touche, salesman. Dorho5 from Pro Wrestling Only says, modern forearm exchanges and one counts, most notably in New Japan Pro Wrestling. Pan, I think they're getting in the way of how a wrestling match is supposed to flow. I don't object to either of these things existing, only their continued use in places they just don't belong. So it's kind of, in New Japan, it has become a bit of a go-to thing, a bit of a cliche where they just get up and start elbowing each other several times.
It's great, but Kieran referenced this after, when we did the sort of the review of
Wrestle Kingdom,
and it's the fact that you'll have it in sort of three or four matches in a row. I think you described it as the balls to the wall sort of man up throwing your forearms at each other type thing. But I do think it is overused when it's on every major show, and it's in, you know, half the matches on the card. You do become a bit desensitised to it. I mean, I remember watching, what show did we go to watch in Oxford? Help me out here, Liam.
Dragon Gate.
And you leapt out of your seat. I can't remember which match it was.
It was the Shingo Takagi.
And you leapt out of your seat, and as they were throwing forearms into each other's chests, you were swinging your arms with each one. You know, it just completely caught up in it, and it was fantastic to see.
You weren't standing up, by the way.
I don't know.
Yeah, you caught up in the moment. It was brilliant. The guys come out and do it in the next match. You're not going to leap out of your seat, are you? Because you've just seen it. You know, it's that, what was it we called it before? The Lord of Diminishing Returns. Thank you very much.
Not to defend New Japan too much, but in comparison to WWE, New Japan doesn't have as many cliches, so I kind of give them this one.
That doesn't make it right. I want to invert that a little, though, because one of the things that really bugs me that I hadn't really thought about till just now is in Western wrestling, the first pinfall of a match being a two count in the kind of mid area of the match, and I know there's the whole catch of the breath thing, but I want to see more fucking one count. I want to see, because you're not, it's like that early selling, like the Dolph Ziggler thing of dying after the first hit. Really sick of seeing a two count like 2 minutes into the match.
Yeah.
That really pisses me off.
Matches that go longer just for the sake of being longer. This is from Dorho5. A match is supposed to tell a story. If you reach the point where that story has been told and just keep tacking stuff onto the ending, you ruin the story. Longer does not always mean better.
I couldn't agree with that more. That's one of my big things.
It tended to be more of a feature of Ring of Honor.
Huntor was pretty guilty of this a few times, though.
Yeah.
Huntor has been guilty of many things, so in terms of a match going slightly longer than it should, I think is probably low down on the rap sheet for old trips.
Another thing as well, though, is particularly with WWE TV matches in particular, is there is not really any more a story to most of the matches anyway.
Yeah,
it really is just a collection of, you know, usually here's our shine, here's our heat, here's our finish. But there's no particular build. I mean, people don't work body parts anymore.
Jerry Von Kramer from Pro Wrestling Only says, the phrase WrestleMania moment.
Oh, God, yes. And I think I'm going to blow a bit more smoke up Kieran's arse here. I think during going over the list of the 30 previous WrestleManias prior to the recent one, didn't you refer to it as WrestleMania moment trademark? But yeah, it's criminally overused, and it's generally vernacular that manages to find its way into to every promo in the build up now.
And the problem is, it also kind of works its way into anything that might actually feel like an organic moment, and it automatically makes it inauthentic or inorganic.
Yeah, it's sort of, you get sort of built up. You know, it's a bit like Austin during the Vince promo during the Alliance. You know, you see the chest going up, the hands on the hip sort of thing. You get excited. Then you hear that word, and it's like the air goes out of the balloon, and your shoulders just slumming. It's just another bullshit build.
That poor bastard from Pro Wrestling Only says, the routine of somebody getting tossed outside before a commercial break, and when they return, the person who got tossed outside usually has his opponent in a chin lock. So there you go, Carl. That's the person that you stepped on earlier on.
Well done, that man.
Indeed. Lindy Jordan from the F4W message board said the fact the company is ran by heels who allow video packages to criticise them and make them look bad while presenting their story back.
While at the same time showing video packages of, you know, them being really sympathetic with dying kids. It's all part of the same cycle of life.
What message are they trying to send
exactly,
here?
Man, I'm just confused.
Jack and Ape from F4W says, contrived setups to impressive looking spots, like a guy springboarding for no reason or someone coming off the top rope with a flying nothing. Well, actually, this is one of those. How about this for a pet peeve of a spot? The guy jumping off the ropes, always to land on the guy's foot in the face, but he's just kind of jumping off to not really do anything. Like, he's always going to stop short anyway. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I always thought of that as more of a mid-90s sort of.
Yeah, it was.
The baby face jumps off to transition into the heel, getting some more heat.
Seft Axius from F4W says, backstage segments where they face the camera but look left or right to the guy they're talking to. The lineup, yeah.
No, it's worse when they're trying to watch TV, though. They're trying to watch the TV from an angle that no one could ever. And it's especially when they move to flat screen TVs, where, of course, if you watch them from the wrong angle, you literally cannot see what's on the TV.
And they're all like trying to peer over each other's shoulders to watch it this this incredibly acute angle.
Yeah.
So just turn around a bit, dude. There's plenty of space where the camera is.
Ben Boring from F4W says, when someone waits until the ref is distracted when interfering in a no DQ match.
How about rope breaks in a no DQ match?
Rope breaks, yeah. Something could be said for visualised cheating, so.
Haphazard from F4W says, overly choreographed matches that are more like a gymnastics exhibition than a fight pretty much makes all modern wrestling unwatchable for me. Kind of similar to what we talked about earlier on, but a massive pet peeve of mine.
It is, and that is why I love the Bret Hart Austin matches so much, because nothing in them, to me anyway, they may find one or two bits that you might disagree with, but nothing in those matches to me feels contrived. You know, Mania 13 felt like a genuine fight. There was nothing sort of cutesy about it or anything like that. You know, you've got, just to use one example, Austin's got the cord around Bret's neck and Bret's reaching for the bell and just sort of the bell and just slinging it back with as much force as he possibly can as a sort of a desperation move. You know, it all just seems, it's got that bit of grit, that bit of realism to it, which just comes across so much better to me.
Not to play devil's advocate, but I'm very much in the mindset of everything does have a place in wrestling, including completely ludicrous, acrobatic, choreographed matches. I'm perfectly happy with one existing on a card. It's just that's not how they tend to turn up. They tend to come along like fucking buses when they're all back to, oh, there you go, fucking another one. Yeah, here we go. You know, three or four back to back on a fucking show, even if they're not back to back. But I, like I say, like so many things on the list we've talked about, in moderation, these things are fine. Nobody's going to complain about them. But it's the prevalence of them in today's wrestling that really gets my goat.
it's very similar to the and you remember this one, Carl, the Blood Generation Do Fixer Dragon Gate 6 man that Ring of Honor did in 2006, I want to say, where everybody loved that match because it was the first time that star was brought to Ring of Honor. Not the first time, it was one of the first times that star was brought to Ring of Honor. Blow away match, nobody had seen anything like this, constant fast paced action. And when you see a Dragon Gate show, the crowd's very, very quiet by the end of it, in a lot of cases, because they're so burned out on that non-stop style match.
Because they've seen it all before the main event gets there. And when the main event finally arrives, it's the stuff that they've seen in match 2, 3, 4, and 5. So it's got no emotional impact on them. They're not amazed by it because they've become, to a degree, desensitized to it.
Cooper from F4W says, Tito Santana, I've always hated him and I cannot explain this. I like Tio. What we got against Tito Santana?
It's because he swam for the border quickly, isn't it? That's why he doesn't like him.
Mid-80s Tio is good stuff. Pat IRC from the UK fan forum says, Randy Orton's DDT off the ropes. I hate it with a passion. It always has to be set up and always looks contrived to fuck. I think the match with Seth at Mania is perhaps the only time it's looked even vaguely in place. As for the rest, please leave it now.
I'd just say, it's kind of like most cliches, I guess. It did it the first couple of times, it was pretty cool. Well, I did it the first time, it was cool. find a way to work it in again, but then it gets so popular it becomes a cliche part of the act, so it is what it is.
Yeah, and it's very much the way the move is now. When he first started using it, you know, it put someone out for a spell. You know, if I remember rightly, he did it to RVD.
It's part of the concussion tour.
And you know, it's like the pump when he first used that sort of thing. Whereas now the DDT is just something that's used for a false finish, you know, 2/3 of the way into a match. So it's lost that luster. So I understand where he's coming from. It just, the move used to mean more than it did.
In terms of the setup, though, I actually quite like it when things are going quick in the middle and he kind of throws them out there and catches them and pulls them in for the DDT and does it fast. I think that looks quite good.
Yeah, but you can only do that on a very limited number of
a doll for a set.
Exactly.
Lion of the Midlands from the UK fan forum says, "Mine is really petty. It's unsanctioned matches that are treated no different from normal matches. Take the unsanctioned street fight between Shawn Michaels and Triple H at SummerSlam 2002. The ring announcer announces it. Why? It's unsanctioned. A ref comes out and refs it. Why? It's unsanctioned. They both come out to music. Again. Why? As you can probably guess, this has pissed me off for nearly 13 years. How about, street fights with the guys don't wear street clothes? That always bothers me.
Yeah, what about the lights out match where the lights go out and come back on?
Well, hold on. If you think with a street fight one, though, is it's the worst thing to me is where you think that, oh, just because you're wearing different clothes, it's a different kind of match. You know, I want to see a street fight in a fucking street. You know, I just do something different for fucks. Go full on Attitude Era and go by the fucking down by the river. Okay, that's where I'm okay.
Well, then the Hollywood backlot brawl was for you, wasn't it?
Big fan.
When you see those street fights out in the streets, yeah, I always see them wearing knee pads.
Yeah, similar vein, but when guys turn up as surprises, but in their gear. Like Orton's return
comes out in his tights and he's not wrestling on the show.
Oh my god, Randy Orton, he's got his pants on. Well, where did he get changed in his car?
I like to think he hasn't got any clothes. That's all he wears.
Yeah.
He just goes shopping in those.
Actually, Matt B45 from FOW also said, guys wearing their wrestling gear for promos and stuff. Punk wearing basketball shorts made so much sense it's not even funny.
The worst is the t-shirt and no trousers. So you just
that's Orton territory all the way.
Possibly nude, yeah.
Yeah.
I just don't know.
Not a good look.
I'm just gonna quickly throw out. I hate current pay-per-view names like Fastlane and Over the Limit and so on. What's wrong with fucking Backlash and No Way Out and No Mercy?
They're not great either.
No, they were great. Fucking Backlash. Extreme Rules. What's wrong with Backlash?
You've drawn a nostalgia to them. That doesn't mean that they were necessarily good in the first place.
Look, if we can get pole position over, we'll be fine.
It's still a pet peeve.
We have stretched the gamut today on pet peeves and irrational hatreds, and despite all of this, we do love pro wrestling, so please tune in next week for Squared Circle Gazette Radio. If we didn't get to your responses this time, I apologise, we had so many to get to. We will be back next week with a show we've titled The Wrong Guy Went Over, and we're looking for your examples of matches that stand out to you throughout wrestling history that had the wrong result and the reason you have for why the other guy should have won and what should have happened from there. So send your suggestions to us early at scgradio@hotmail.com and I guarantee we'll read them on the show. Four. G. John Chase.
Backlash!
For Kieran O'Rourke.
Au revoir.
For Luke Edwards.
Yeah!
And for Carl Jones.
I'm starting to sober up.
I am Liam O'Rourke. Thank you very much for listening, and we are out of here.